It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. We got a great panel for you to talk about the Windows Surface event and Windows 1809. Daniel Rubino, executive editor at Windows Central, to talk about photography and just normal stuff, and a little whiskey and football. Ant Pruitt from Tech Republic, and from KTLA, their tech reporter, Rich DeMuro. We are going to talk about the weirdest tech story I've ever seen. I don't know who to believe. Confusion over USB-C ports and California's net neutrality law. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 687, recorded Sunday, October 7th, 2018. Odorless and weightless hackers. This Week in Tech is brought to you by IT Pro TV. Build or expand your IT career with flexible training and binge-worthy content from IT Pro TV. Visit itpro.tv/twit and use the code TWIT30 to get a free 7-day trial and 30% off an individual monthly membership for the lifetime of your active subscription. And by Casper, a sleep brand that continues to revolutionize its line of products to create an exceptionally comfortable sleep experience one night at a time. You can save $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/twit and using the promo code TWIT at checkout. And by stamps.com. Buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it right from your desk. For our special offer, go to stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter TWIT. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans, introducing Rate Shield Approval. If you're in the market to buy a home, Rate Shield Approval locks up your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. It's a real game changer. Learn more and get started at rocketmortgage.com/twit2. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the... I'm sorry, did I come out a little explosively? I'm going to calm down now. If you're hungover or you've been watching football, the show where we talk about the tech news of the week with the best tech journalists I can round up at a short notice. Actually, we got a great panel for you. I want to welcome, start off with Daniel Rubino. We'll start on the all the way on the right. Daniel is the executive editor of Windows Central. It's been an age since you've been on, so I'm thrilled to have you on again. Thank you for being here. Where are you located?
I'm in Worcester, Massachusetts.
Worcester. Spelled Worcester. Wrong, but okay. Spell Worcestershire.
Worcester.
Yeah. And you were at the Surface event, I take it.
Correct.
Awesome. Yep. So we'll definitely talk about that. And kind of a shocker from Microsoft on 1809, but that's to come.
Right.
Also joining us from the fabulous Tech Republic, Ant Pruitt. It's great to have you, Ant.
And his
Clemson shirt. He's got his orange... That's a tiger, right? Tiger paw.
The tiger paw, baby.
Yeah.
Tigers for life.
Yeah. And welcoming for the first time to TWiT, but I'm thrilled to have him, not the first time in our studio, Rich DeMuro from KTLA. Hey, Rich.
Thanks for having me on, Leo. It's a pleasure to be here today.
It's been a huge oversight not having you on before. Rich is my designated fill-in. I likened you to Lou Gehrig today on the radio show.
Oh, thank you.
I told the story of Wally Pipp, the first baseman for the New York Yankees, who got a bad headache and couldn't play that day. And he went to the manager and said, can I take the day off? The manager said, yeah, I got this kid, Lou Gehrig. He could fill in for you. Rookie Gehrig never left first base for some 1,000 games, 3,000 games, something like that. And no one remembers Wally Pipp except me. And I don't want to be the next Wally Pipp, but you're definitely a Lou Gehrig. So I appreciate you filling in, Rich. It's nice to have you.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. And I'm glad you're all here because there's a great conundrum facing us in the tech journalism community today. And it started on Thursday with Bloomberg Business Week and some amazing reportage. 17 anonymous sources in government, you know, three-letter agencies, Amazon and Apple, said that Chinese spies had placed a tiny rice-sized microchip on Supermicro motherboards in 2015. These Supermicro motherboards were used in many, many places, servers by Apple, the Department of Defense, We even had one because this all came to light. According to, now I'm going to say this a couple of times in this story because I want to emphasize, according to Bloomberg Businessweek, we even had one because it was first discovered by Amazon when they were doing their due diligence. They were about to acquire a company called Elemental Technologies. Elemental makes a streaming box, a box we've used for some years, a very expensive box that takes our video, compresses it, and then feeds it out to Ustream, YouTube, Twitch, Mixer, whoever it is that's restreaming our stuff. These Elemental motherboards, Amazon, during a routine security audit before the acquisition, found this little chip. According to Bloomberg Businessweek, the chip was posing as a minor support chip on the motherboard. Nobody would pay any attention to it. But when the motherboard was first booted in a server, would modify the operating system, phone home the Chinese military, and help the Chinese military hack these servers in the Pentagon. Elemental's widely used. As I said, we use it. I presume if this is true, our motherboards were hacked. But then the story gets weirder. So 17 sources, anonymous sources, Bloomberg Businessweek, highly credible source. The next day, Amazon, Apple, even the freaking Chinese government unequivocally deny it. They say it never happened. Apple said the story was wrong and misinformed. The Department of Homeland Security yesterday, well, actually, their denial was a little less unequivocal. They said, we have no reason to doubt. We have no reason to doubt that Apple and Amazon are telling the truth. That's not exactly like, no, it never happened. That's like, well, we have no reason now. In this particular circumstance, we currently have no reason to doubt. Nevertheless, the denials from Amazon and Apple were really strong. No, it didn't happen. Bloomberg's completely wrong. How does this happen? Is this actually, I'm going to poll you. We'll start with you, Rich. Who's right?
Oh, man. I feel like this is kind of the biggest fear of kind of the tech world, right? Like all this stuff is made over in China. This is kind of the perfect way of infiltrating the systems with a tiny chip that nobody recognizes or even cares to notice. And, you know, they can take control of these things. They can modify the system on startup, whatever they want to do. So it's tough for me to believe that Businessweek has this many people saying this happened and it hasn't happened. And I understand why these big companies, including Amazon and Apple, are strongly denying this, because it's pretty bad for them if this happened to them. So I sort of believe it. And I think that just reading the story, I mean, it's fascinating. I mean, I couldn't put this thing down.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was like so well written and so like I just wanted to know more and more and more. But I think what was missing in this story to me is kind of the consequence, like concrete, like what they did with these little chips. And maybe I missed that, but I didn't see like, you know, did they take down something? Did they, you know, or is this all just like kind of laying in wait for something that they want to do in the future? That was kind of the part that I was confused upon.
It's a great question. Ant, who do you believe?
Initially, my gut is actually siding with Apple, just because of their history regarding security and privacy.
And why would they lie, right? Well, I mean, that would be a big deal for Apple PR to issue, and they issued two statements.
Yeah.
All right. They come forth pretty quickly about it, and then I just think back to other scenarios in the past with Apple, as far as like when we had that shooting at that school in California and they wanted to search the phones, and Apple was trying to do the right thing from a privacy and security standpoint. So my gut just says I'm going to go with Apple. Now, had it just been Amazon saying, no, that's not true, I'd have had the hairy eyebrows.
You don't trust it. Apple said specifically, quote, on this, I mean, this is as strong as you can get, we can be very clear. Apple has never found malicious chips, hardware manipulations, or vulnerabilities purposely planted in any server. Daniel Rubino, what do you think? You've been covering this for a long time. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm leaning towards this. There's got to be some truth to this. Now, what we may not know are the exact details. Actually, we don't know the exact details. And there could be some crossed wires here on information. Maybe some hardware was shipped to Apple, but it was caught in time and never deployed it, in which case both things could be true. But right. You know, there's been a lot of reports around Huawei and other companies too, right, about this possibility, this threat. And it works both ways. You know, there's concerns too, U.S. companies doing the same. I don't know. My hunch says that there's probably some truth to this. It's just a question of to what extent the damage was done. But none of this is surprising to anyone who's been covering this industry for the last couple of years, as this big concern over the strength of Chinese tech and its influence on U.S. economy. Everybody knows that the way you wage war is changing from a pure military exercise to more technological or information in the case of what Russia's been doing or accused of been doing a lot recently. So just because the companies deny this stuff, if it's an issue of national security, they could be quite frankly told to don't talk about this because you don't want to expose those vulnerabilities. Maybe there's active investigations going on. We don't know all the details here, but I find it hard to believe with 17 sources that none of this is true. I think it's more about degrees at this point.
Zach Whitaker, who writes about security at TechCrunch and has worked most recently at CBS, he's been covering security forever. He says, welcome to the murky world of national security reporting. He says, even with this story, my gut is mixed. There is one potential scenario that maybe means both of these, that the companies aren't lying, but the story is true. I have to say, to add myself to this poll, there's no way Bloomberg Businessweek runs this story unless, and they stand behind it, by the way, unless they absolutely have unequivocal evidence of this. 17 sources, all anonymous, yeah, but you'd have to say Bloomberg Businessweek is making this up. That's too many people to not be true. So here's maybe a very narrow, maybe the Apple PR team that responded, and this was John Gruber's theory, didn't know about it, right? If something like this happens, you're not going to send out a memo to everybody in Apple saying, hey, by the way, look what we found. You're going to keep it very quiet. So maybe a handful of people at Apple will know, and the ones who don't know are the ones making the unequivocal denial. There's also a possibility there's a U.S. government gag order, although Apple, again, says we are in no way under a gag order. But again, maybe the people who are under the gag order are a handful of people, not the people writing the press release. That's the only way I could see both sides being accurate. And I don't think Apple PR is lying in such an outright. They would say nothing, or they would say little, or they would say, there's lots of ways they could slice this without saying, no, it did not happen.
Yeah, it's odd that they came out so strong in their denial of this, like immediately, and emailed the media, including myself. And that rarely happens when they, you know, usually the way Apple works is they kind of talk to the certain media that covers the beat that they want to get the story out with. This time they just sent out a blanket email through their legal guy denying it and kind of linking to this, which I found to be very heavy-handed. So it's like one of these things where you want to believe Apple, but at the same time, it seems like it's overly like what are they? I understand they have a lot to lose in this, but it just seems like they really want to make sure that like, no, we are not involved in this. This is not true at all. I wonder if their reporter is going to be invited to the next Apple event.
That's Apple's stick, baby.
Right.
Probably not. We won't be seeing you at the next Apple event. As somebody who hasn't been invited to an Apple event in years, I could say that stick isn't that weighty. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say another angle to this, possibly is more the conspiratorial angle, is that this is really a story. The U.S. government has a vested interest in undermining Chinese tech, or at least eroding the trust in it for such circumstances. We obviously know about the Qualcomm, Broadcom attempt at buyout and how that was blocked. And, you know,
do you think Bloomberg got played by the U.S. intelligence community?
I mean, in a way, no. 17 seems like a lot. On the other hand, this is kind of what intelligence is supposed to be doing. And so I don't think we can discount it. I still think there's actually a threat from China in this sense. Why? Because why wouldn't they? Right.
Right.
It's just that's how counterintelligence works. We do the same thing. So there may be some, you know, like I said, there may be some truth to this, but it may have been played up by some people in the government too. To, you know, even this current administration is very much against, you know, giving China too much leverage when it comes to manufacturing. And so I don't know. There's it's a hard story to follow and believe, especially when you're talking about espionage, counterintelligence, and national security.
Bloomberg writes, the company's denials are countered by six current and former senior national security officials who, in conversations that began during the Obama administration and continued under the Trump administration, detailed the discovery of the chips in the government's investigation. This has been going on for several years. And it sounds like Bloomberg reporters have been working on this story for several years. One of those officials and two people inside Amazon provided extensive information on how the attack played out at Elemental and Amazon. That's another thing. You would not only have to, it's one thing to say, well, you can easily get 17 CIA people to say, yeah, yeah, this happened. I mean, that's their job. But then you're getting people inside Amazon saying, confirming it. The details match. The officials and one of the insiders also described Amazon's cooperation with the government investigation. In addition to the three Apple insiders, four of the six U.S. officials confirmed that Apple was a victim. 17 people confirmed the manipulation of Supermicro's hardware. The sources were granted anonymity because of the sensitive and, in some cases, classified nature of the information. Daniel, that's an interesting theory, though. Maybe this is... you know, it's clear something's going on.
Yeah, I think that's the truth.
But we don't know what it is.
Information warfare. It's the new battle of the 21st century. Super dangerous, super hard to counter. It's who do you believe, who do you trust, and when you undermine all institutions around you, people can't even trust news sources, right, anymore. So it's we're in a brave new world. It's not a... I'm kind of nervous about it. When I did political science, undermining classic institutions is the first way you destabilize society. So
that's exactly right.
Is a real threat to it.
That's exactly right.
Well, and from the consumer standpoint, I mean, obviously this was kind of big server things, but for the average consumer, I think it makes you think twice too. With everything that you have in your house, I mean, we're all putting these smart speakers in our homes. Where are those manufactured? I mean, this is becoming a reality for the average person to think about the stuff that we're carrying with us and the stuff that we're putting in our homes, the routers, the systems. And this becomes like very clear that, oh my gosh, like this is something that of course we've thought of, but not into this detail. And you're just like, this is exactly how it's done,
right?
In a big way.
Right.
IoT is a huge security vulnerability right now. Microsoft's trying to counter with Azure Sphere, which has been in the headlines recently, is their first attempt at making these sort of systems more secure for everybody, anyone who's manufacturing devices. But right now it's Wild West. People are just putting microphones and internet into all these devices. We're putting them in our homes and there's no regulation or checks. It's going to come back to bite us. I guarantee it will. It's just a matter of time.
Well, really, if you believe... Go ahead, Ant.
As much as I said I trust, you know, what Apple's response was, at the same time, I still have that little fear in the back of my head of the button that the Chinese could just push at any time, because of everything that I'm looking at right now was not made right here in the U.S., and they could easily just push a button to make things just go nuts on me and maybe cause some even bigger problems if they wanted to, because we don't know. I can crack this machine open and I don't know what all of these transistors and capacitors and all of that. I don't know what any of that stuff is doing. I just know it's my motherboard.
Well, I mean, you make an excellent point. Very few people understand the complexity of our modern world and fewer still understand the security issues and could detect these problems. And if you have a determined adversary with governmental, with, you know, nation state level resources behind them, even if it's just North Korea, it seems to me that that it would be very, very difficult if you had somebody who wanted to do this to prevent it. Everything is made in China, almost everything. So the supply chain is coming out of China. And even if you're buying a phone made in Korea or Taiwan or Thailand or India or Brazil, many of the parts are made in China. So right. I doubt there's one consumer electronic device in your house that it hasn't something that was manufactured in China.
I mean, I'm sitting here looking at junk on my desk. You know, this is a power distribution board. Pretty sure this was not made in the USA. Yeah. You know,
does it say Super Micro on it? Just right. Look for that. Yeah. It's like the equivalent of the Intel Inside sticker. Can you imagine if Super Micro had one of those and now everyone just sees those? I'm going to go from the flip side, though, on the fact that China knows that all this stuff is big business. And I think, I mean, clearly we love to believe in these conspiracy theories and we love to imagine that it's like us versus them versus, you know, Russia, you know. I do think there, of course, are elements of that in our world. But at the same time, I want to believe that they know that the business that they're going to make off these components are way better than, you know, the business they're going to make off of the whatever marketplace they're dealing with.
Absolutely.
With the shady stuff.
But what's going on in China, and it's true in other places too, is there's more than one constituency. So there are absolutely, I would say most of the Chinese government wants to maintain good relations because, after all, we're their biggest market. On the other hand, there are, and this hack, it's presumed came from the Chinese military. There are, I'm sure, hardliners in the Chinese military who say, yeah, let's just in case, let's be ready for cyber warfare. I don't think it's monolithic, in other words. And I completely agree with you, Daniel. This completely could be a conspiracy from the United States government who wants us to say exactly that.
Mm-hmm. It's crazy.
What a time to be alive. At this point, the only way America can hack the rest of the world is by putting something in a Frappuccino. Because
that's the only thing we're exporting is Starbucks.
Wait, we got Facebook, though. Facebook, I hear, is not so security.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
What a world. What a world we live in. But it was almost inevitable when the tools we use got so complex. Jerry Pournelle, I've mentioned this to Jerry before he passed, in his book Lucifer's Hammer. The story is that a giant asteroid hits the United States.
Great book.
Yeah, isn't it good? And there's just a few survivors in the world who kind of have to cobble together existence again. But he points out that we live in a world where we use stuff every day. We have no idea how it works, nor could we recreate it if we had to. And that's your car. That's your freaking microwave oven, let alone your computers and your phones.
I'm guilty.
We're all guilty. And I don't think there's any one person who could do this, who could recreate this. So that's kind of the consequence of that is there's a huge amount of trust in using all of this stuff. And if you had an actor who decided that he didn't care about being trusted or wanted to subvert this, is it chilling or is it industrial espionage? I mean, so a lot of these servers are used by the Department of Defense. These elemental servers alone are used all over the place. The CIA, the NSA, they're used in drone placement. They're used
controllers.
They're used all over the place. And
but here's the question: has anyone cracked one of these open and found this little chip? I mean, wouldn't that be the first thing that one of these companies would do? Is kind of look in there? I mean, I know it's only been a couple of days since the story came out, but wouldn't that be part of this reporting?
I mean, I think that's what the original report actually did say was that when Amazon was looking to buy Elemental, they sent their boards for review to a third party company who found a little chip on there that was not part of the original diagram designed for that chipset. And that's what the red flag was. And then I think trying to figure out what it does or its potential was a matter of sort of reverse engineering it. But
well, I can bet that everybody who has a Super Micro motherboard and has the capability. The problem is, who has the capability? There's a lot of little chips on there. Have you ever looked at a little motherboard?
Yeah.
And they're labeled. But I mean, I don't know how you would have to take the thing apart, test each one individually.
Right.
Non-trivial.
And who has those resources?
An Elemental costs $30,000. I am not taking my Elemental. And I actually proposed this to our engineering team. I said, we have a new Elemental from AWS, so that we just got a few months ago. So that will not, obviously. But we had the old Elemental from this time frame. We were using it back then. But unfortunately, we had to send it back.
But where's the iFixit teardown when
you
need it?
Yeah, I want a teardown. Yes. I would iFixit maybe could do that. Yeah. They specialize in identifying unlabeled or poorly labeled or incorrectly labeled chips. I think we can all agree that there's potential for this to happen, whether it actually did happen or not. And I think Bloomberg didn't get it wrong. I just don't understand what happened, you know, what the response is and why the response is that. And I don't think Apple is so venal as to say, well, that will hurt our business. We better lie about it. I agree with you in that case. Yeah, there's no way that's the case. I think it's much more that whoever issued this release didn't know, if anything, you know, and nobody's talking. Maybe even Tim Cook doesn't know. I don't know. All right. I thought that would be fun to start with a mystery story. Let's take a break. We'll come back and talk about stuff we do know. One thing we know an awful lot about is what the Google event on Tuesday is going to be. This is the most leaked product I have ever seen in my life.
Air quotes leaked.
Oh, okay. So you think there's a, well, let's find out. Do you have a theory about why all this stuff has been leaked? Maybe this is intentional.
Once, twice leaked, I get that. But when you get into, there's 12 different leaks.
And Gadget today bought a Pixel 3.
That's
from
crazy.
A Hong Kong supplier, and they did an unboxing. It's not announced yet.
And that's calculated PR. You know?
All right. I want to hear your theories. Let's take a break. Ant Pruitt is here. Always great to have Ant. Contributing writer to Tech Republic. Photographer. You still doing the Friday night videos at YouTube?
It's paused right now because of football season with my kids playing ball. And sometimes we end up traveling Friday night for football. So I've sort of been doing them here and there just to keep them rolling. But I still love doing it when I can.
It's nice. It's always there are plenty of them on Ant's YouTube page. You have lots to look at. Also, Daniel Rubino is here. He is executive editor at Windows Central, one of the key Windows Microsoft journalists out there. We'll talk about the Surface event in just a little bit and kind of a big oops. In fact, when we come back, let's talk about it. The big oops from Microsoft. Rich DeMuro from KTLA, richontech.tv is his website. His podcast is there. His stories are there, and you can catch him on KTLA Channel 5 in Los Angeles. Did you warn your viewers about the sonic boom coming up in a couple hours?
Oh, my gosh. I did not, but I think our news did.
I did. So, I warned them. Of course, KFI was preempting the show for football, but...
But you still said it.
I said it. The SpaceX is launching a Falcon 9 from Vandenberg tonight. John Slonina, our space enthusiast here, says that the launch window, it's a satellite, the launch window for this is instantaneous. There is no... If they don't launch it at 7:28, they're going to have to wait till tomorrow. Pardon me, 7:38? Thursday. They have to wait till Thursday.
I knew nothing about this.
Yeah.
Right?
I see this from anywhere?
You'll hear it from Barbara and Lompoc, anywhere in that area, because they expect, in fact, Elon tweeted. What's his tweet? It was pretty funny.
Oh, no. Should he be tweeting?
Should you be tweeting, Elon? Really? But, of course, if you're going to follow Elon Musk, you got to. He says, get ready because it's going to be a loud boom. Sonic boom.
I can't wait.
Sonic boom warning, Elon Musk tweets. This won't be subtle. And it'll be the first time they've ever landed one of the SpaceX rockets on the land on the West Coast. So, yeah, we'll watch that video, 7:28 tonight. Maybe they'll do it in the football game as they pause the game.
They better not.
Let's all watch. No,
they better not. No, I'm not even trying to go there. As much as I love my science and tech, do not screw around with my football game.
Do not mess with my football game. Texans, Cowboys, be there. Our show today brought to you by IT Pro TV. A recent study from MIT found that IT occupations between 2004 and 2017 grew 19.5%. That's 8 times the growth rate for other jobs over that past decade. 8 times. And I know from other research that there are 1 million IT security jobs unfilled, ready for you. This is a great career path. If you're watching this show, you obviously love tech. Listening to this show, you obviously love tech. Have you thought about a career in IT? I talk to so many people every day when people come to the studio. They say, you know, I'm in IT because I became a geek because of you. IT Pro TV is the way to get the skills to get the job. Because unfortunately, if you're just starting in IT, you need to get those certifications. That's how you prove to your future employer that you've got the skills. A lot of people go to technical schools for this, spend tens of thousands of dollars, or try to do it themselves on their own. That's hard, too. IT Pro TV makes it easy to start a career in IT, or if you're already in IT, to accelerate your career. 4,000 hours of binge-worthy on-demand training you can watch anywhere. They have iOS and Android apps. You can watch it on your web browser. You can Chromecast it. They have a Roku app, Amazon Fire TV app. They have Apple TV apps. And so that means you can watch it on your big screen, hop in the car, listen on the way to work, put it in a little window on your work computer, and absorb that information, everything from the CompTIA certs to the Cisco certs, EC Council, VMware. They've recently added some really nice organization. They have so much content. They add more content. They do live streaming, so they're adding dozens of hours every week, and they've really done a nice job of organizing this by category, by cert, by job role. They've got a great search engine, so you can find the courses you want. If you watch live, you can chat along with them, and they really are engaging, knowledgeable hosts. They pick them first because of their knowledge. They're all professionals from the field, but then also because they've got great personality and they're engaging and fun to watch. You're going to really enjoy it. Learn IT, pass your certs, accelerate your career. If you have a team, they have a team portal for you, the IT Pro TV Pro portal. Gives you complete control over the training schedule. You can track results, see metrics like logins, viewing time, courses viewed. So go to itpro.tv/twit. Learn about the team solution. You get a free demo there. Or if you're an individual and you want to learn, there's Don. Go to itpro.tv/twit and you can have a 7-day free trial. And there's a code there, twit30, twit30. That'll give you 30% off your subscription as long as you stay active. Forever, if you want. Standard subscriptions, just to give you an idea, normally $570 a year, a lot less than a technical school. Apply that 30% off, $399. That's less than just buying the study materials. $399 a year. itpro.tv/twit. Use the offer code TWIT30. Flexible training, binge-worthy content, life-changing results. itpro.tv/twit. So, Tuesday, Daniel, you went to the strangest place in the West Village. I saw pictures. Microsoft had set up couches and invited a bunch of journalists with laptops.
Right.
But nowhere to put them to cover to cover the new Surface release, nor did they stream it. It was the strangest thing.
In fairness, this was a similar repeat to how they did Surface Book 2 last year.
Right.
So that too was not streamed and was, although that was a brighter environment. It actually was a cool event. Like, it was done well. I liked it.
You had fun?
Very chill. Yeah.
And you said something interesting. Panos Panay, who's in charge of hardware at Microsoft, you said gave the best, most inspiring talk you've seen.
Yeah. Yeah. He was going on about being creating and them making the right tools to enable people to go out and do their jobs. And it was just, he again brought in his children. It's been a recurring theme in his talks. And that's not just to brag about his adorable kids, but also just to talk about the human element of technology.
That's nice. Yeah.
And he showed his daughter playing piano in this like one moment she had where she got really inspired because she was like kind of nailing it. And he was talking about how we all have these moments during the day where we get really inspired and everything just kind of clicks. And that's what technology is supposed to do. It was just he always gives these kind of like really inspiring talks, but this one was probably like one of his best, considering the event, which, you know, what was announced was mostly refreshes versus a new form factor device.
Right.
That was really going to wow us.
New black matte black Surface Pros, although so last year was the Surface Pro no number, but it was the fifth. This year it's the Surface Pro 6. I don't know. The Surface laptop, is the Alcantara black as well, or just the...
Yes.
It's all black.
It's all black.
And they have the other colors too. And then I'm using a Surface Studio, And yeah. I was kind of hoping they didn't announce a new one because it's ridiculously right. expensive. And yeah. they did. Well, it's even more expensive. So. It's been 2 years, but $3,500.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's kind of low-end hardware, but the screen is just stunning. I don't feel the urge to buy a new one. Here's a picture.
You don't want the USB-C?
Yeah. It's, by the way, can I point out the only computer Microsoft sells with USB-C?
Well, Surface Book 2. Surface Book 2.
Oh, it has USB-C? Okay, but not yeah. the laptop. That's right. The Go does, doesn't it?
Yeah, not the laptop. Go does. The so Go Surface does. Surface Go's got Type-C. Surface yeah. Pro and laptop does not, yes.
And Paul Thurrott, who is pictured here, in shorts, along with Brad Sams. By the way, Panos wasn't the only person who brought his kids. Apparently, Bradley Cooper showed up with his baby.
Yeah, yeah. No one. I didn't really hear about that till after the event. I was like, oh, okay.
That's a little weird.
It is a little weird. Yeah.
But wait, I want to go back to those the couches, because here's the thing. Like, this has always been kind of my problem with the Surface, and I love the Surface, the Pro, but like. Isn't it really tough to actually type on it?
It's not, as Mary Jo Foley calls, it's not lappable.
Right.
Something that small is pretty difficult.
Notice, by the way, Mary Jo Foley took this picture. She has an HP laptop that's sitting on the right, right on there that is lappable. Brad seems to be doing all right with his Surface Book. Paul is attempting, I think, to use a Surface Pro. Didn't Panos Panay took that? Laptop. Oh, it's a Surface
yep.
laptop? Okay. He took it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. He took it away. I don't know if Paul ever got it back. Nor did he get new one.
The lappable thing is strictly related to your leg size. So that's not to say anything about Mary Jo, but I have very long
It's actually, let's be more technically accurate, femur length.
Yeah, femur length, exactly. Yes. Yeah, so I have zero issue
I'm getting
with
my
it.
Surface out.
You have to have a certain length femur.
Yes.
Otherwise, you can't lap it. What is that there that you've got, Ant?
This little old school Chromebook 2 13-inch or what have you. It's That's tiny in my hands to me, but yet it's perfect for me to sit on the couch or whatever and just get some work,
but
some writing done or some editing done.
Looking at you, you have some pretty massive femurs.
Well, maybe.
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 But no, it's not polite to talk about a man's femurs in public. But I just
or a woman's femurs, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm definitely that's right out. Yeah,
yeah.
We know that's no longer okay.
But think about the ability to type on these smaller devices in your lap. It's not necessarily your lap surface area, or whatever. I think more about just how my hands are placed on a lot of smaller devices on my lap versus having them up on a tabletop or something.
I don't mean to make a huge thing out of it. It's not that big a deal. It is a cozy, nice event. It's just odd to bring all these journalists and their laptops in and make them put it on their lap.
I think in part of that was because as much as we all want to take notes, we were live blogging it, everything.
Right. They don't like it.
They were
that,
actually going
really.
For this effect of chill out, relax.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need to take every note here. And to be honest, the presentation was pretty vague anyway. So it wasn't a lot of detail. It was just like Surface Laptop 2 and Surface Pro 6. But they didn't go into, they didn't even talk about the actual processors. They just said like 8th generation.
Yeah, we don't know what the processors are.
We do now.
Oh, we do.
We found out at the event. Yeah, and we had to go dig around. But I could tell you all the
Are they all Y processors? What is, tell me
no,
about.
No, they're U processors. So Surface Laptop and Surface Pro get the 8th generation U processors, but these are Kaby Lake R. So these were technically announced late 2017. Basically, every laptop that we've been using from HP and Dell and Lenovo for the last year have used these processors. What they are not are the brand new Whiskey Lake series, which are actually coming out now, October, November, from new manufacturer from Dell and Lenovo and all that. So they are like actually kind of I don't want to say a generation because Intel's their 8th generation split up into like 3 generations.
It's so confusing. It's just crazy.
Yeah. But they're using basically last year's chip. And this is key because I was hoping, and I wrote an article talking about if they go with Whiskey Lake allows them to get 4 extra PCIe lanes, 16 versus 12. That's the big thing with the 15 watts. And that would allow them theoretically to put on Thunderbolt 3 then.
Now you can have the Type-C connector and have it really be a Thunderbolt 3 port.
Everything they want it to be.
This is the big problem with Type-C. My point has always been, and I bet you it's why Microsoft didn't do it, it's confusing. That thing could be USB 3.1. It could be Thunderbolt 3. It could support power. Maybe not. It could support video, but it might not. And you can't tell. Not. You look at it. It's just this thing.
On the other hand, they use it on Surface Go. So they do use it. I find the confusion argument a little bit getting old. Like, I feel like you could do 3.1 with power delivery now and be fine. Thunderbolt 3 is another bag. But the reason they have such problems is because Surface Pro has a Surface – the Keyboard Connect uses PCIe lanes. And the actual Surface Connect uses around 4 PCIe lanes too. You think of the Surface Connect port as basically a modified version of Thunderbolt 3 already.
Right.
So when you do all that, they ran out of PCIe lanes.
That's why they need the Whiskey Link.
That's why they need Whiskey Link. But that would also involve a significant redesign, both internally and also externally now with the ports. And it's clear they came into this with, we're just going to refresh this line at a minimum cost.
That's really what it is, right? It's not, yeah. You know what? One product that does have Type-C, the new Microsoft Surface headphones.
Yes.
That has a Type-C connector, but it's just for charging. These have multi-level noise canceling, which is kind of cool. Why do you think Microsoft is going into this business?
I'll spoil the news here from our reporting and sourcing. The big story behind this event was originally this event was going to be to announce Andromeda, the foldable pocketable PC. When you think of this event in that context, it all makes a little bit more sense, because things like Surface Pro, Surface Laptop, and those other refreshes become little side stories that are super cool, but they're not the main focus. And if you think of Surface headphones, they were supposed to be an accessory, supposedly, for Andromeda as a way for working with communication as well as enjoying music and all that. And that's why they kind of came out of nowhere. But Andromeda is on the back burner, or rather, they're doing a lot of work on the software experience, because that's not straight Windows 10. That's Windows Core OS, the new Andromeda experience, which is now still being worked on. So
this has been leaked out, and people have been talking about Andromeda for months and months and months. Yeah. What is a foldable tablet? What, I don't even know what that means.
So at least going by the patent designs and everything we hear, this is actually a two-screen device. But Microsoft has invested a lot of research into, and you can just read their patents online about this, because they're going to have like a hinge in the center where the two screens meet. So they've been working on technology such that the way, if you have it curves just like a book on the inside, the glass, just like a binding works. But they've been working on technology so that the light emitting from the LCD at that curve does not appear to be curved.
Let me understand. There's a hinge. There's a in the middle, but is it one screen that folds?
It's two screens.
Two screens.
So it's not a single LCD. We've seen that technology before. Samsung supposedly working on it as well, as well as LG.
But that's not it.
Yeah, these are two separate displays.
This is kind of like the Courier thing that was rumored for years.
Exactly. Yeah, the roots of this go back to Courier. It's the idea of a pocketable journal that you carry around with
you. So how big is this thing?
We don't actually know. I believe it's between 6 and 7 inches. But
it's tiny.
Yeah, it's supposed to actually be able to fold up, and you should be able to fit it into your pocket. But we don't know the exact dimensions of it. They probably, presumably, have a few prototypes that they're toying around with. But the technology is you can use either display. It rotates around. You can keep the displays open. They can turn off independently. I've seen some of the way the software operates already. It looks like a combination. If you take Windows 10 with some elements of Windows 10 Mobile with some of the gestures of Windows 8, this is what this kind of looks like. There's still a start menu, but it's sort of like the start menu in Windows 10. You can bring up an app list. You have swipe gestures. And when you turn on the device, the first thing that comes up is a new app called Journal app that you take notes on. But it's built around the idea of a pen and this idea of inking. It's not a phone, but it can make phone calls.
Don't call it the Surface phone. They'll get upset.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's supposed to redefine what a companion pocketable PC is supposed to be in 2019, 2020, whenever it's supposed to come out. But it's this idea, if you take a phone today, like a smartphone, how we use them, and you start from scratch and be like, okay, do people even make phone calls on these things anymore? No. Okay, so let's rethink about what people are doing on these things and want to do with them. And it's clear people want large displays, but in a form factor they can carry around.
This is actually pretty cool. Is what you know about this all from the patent filings, or are there other?
No, because we've seen bits of the operating system, and we've talked to people.
Okay.
The Verge, Tom Warren did an article. I mean, this is supposed to be Panos Panay's pet project, basically. It's like his kind of, ultimate device.
It would be a big deal if they released this potentially iPhone-level device. And I can see why Panay might hitch his start of this. Do you think it really was supposed to be an Andromeda event?
Yeah, we've been anticipating this was going to be the event going back to the beginning of the year and even a little bit late 2017. I would describe them as sort of windows where they try to launch hardware, but it all comes down to
you've got to be able to make it. You can't.
Yeah. I was like, why? Like even Surface Studio, I was like, why did you guys release this now? And they simply said because it's ready.
Right.
And that's when they release hardware. It's that simple. It's like when it reaches a threshold and they feel confident about it. And this device, there's a lot riding on it. You got to really thread a needle on it to get it right. And so I don't think they're going to release it till they have the entire OS operating experience, solid, and they can actually believe in it.
It's not Windows 10 as we have it now. It's a modified version of Windows 10.
It's called Windows Core OS. If you think of what you see as the exterior of Windows 10 these days, with minus all the bloat from the last 25 years, 30 years of Windows, the legacy aspects, they're kind of taking the best aspects of how Chrome OS runs, but it looks like Windows 10. And there's different UI experiences. So there's one called Polaris for desktop. There's Aruba, which is what the Hub 2 is called. There's one for HoloLens. And then there's going to be one for mobile called Andromeda. And so these all have flexible UIs that can adapt to the hardware, but they can also, they don't require, bulky processors and a lot of horsepower. So it's sort of like how Windows 10 Mobile was, but even Windows 10 Mobile is built off of legacy software. We see this.
Panos Panay, if he's listening, just shivered.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Don't compare us. If you think of it as that, we're seeing it in front of us. Every time they take legacy control panel systems and put it into the new settings, that's part of this. They're shifting all this core code, which has been written for 20 years, and they have to go through the shell and decouple it.
It's always baffled me because they keep the old control panel and they put in the new control panel. All that does is confuse users, but makes a little bit more sense if this is a direction they're heading.
Yeah, if you look at the fall update, which we'll want to talk about, they've been taking even aspects of drivers and everything and putting it. And so the OS is becoming UWP. It's becoming that design. There'll always be Windows 10 Pro for enterprise, hospitals, and all that, but where they're
going. When you say UWP, are you talking, that's the Microsoft Store apps, but are you talking like Windows 10S?
Yeah, it will be a form of Windows 10S.
That's the Windows that will only run apps from the store, no other apps.
Yeah, exactly. And that's their future. There will be solutions to running Win32, which are called Veil and Rail, which are methods to stream either locally through containerized versions of Win32 or through streaming. So they have solutions for that. But with this, mind you, we're talking about where Windows will be in 5 to 10 years. That's where they see it going.
Here's a mock-up of what this might look like.
Yeah.
Mr. LaPorte, you said a second ago, wow, this is cool. What do you find cool about this in particular? I'm curious.
Obviously you do not, right? You wouldn't be caught dead carrying this thing. Is that what you're saying?
I'm with you. I'm trying to figure out. I agree. I'm like, I don't know if I need this, but...
Oh, you want it! Oh, come on. Okay, let me tell you
what. I love the idea, but I just...
Okay. So I carry around, and I think you all do, a slab of glass, your smartphone. That's not a phone.
Right.
That's what's interesting about this thing. This thing, the form factor of this thing is based on it being a phone, but it hasn't been a phone in a few years. So it's time to stop the phone part of this thing because it's that's why we got notches. That's why, this slab of glass is not the ideal form factor for a computer. Let's face it.
Okay.
Right?
But we draw the line, though. We know that this is not a full-fledged laptop or desktop. We just know that this is an extension of those laptops and desktops that we have.
Here's a thought exercise for you, Ant. If you acknowledged, okay, people want a portable device they carry in their pocket that does a few things, like it does do phone calls and messaging, but it also has maps and GPS, and I can run apps on it, and maybe, you know, even get some productivity done, although I think for most people that's not a big deal. If you could start from scratch, what would you make that thing look like?
Right.
Not like that.
Is it too big? Is that what you don't like about it?
It looks like the old Windows CE. Like, what were those called?
Yeah. That's why I said Panos Panay does not like it when you say Windows Mobile, because that was an...
They do want to distance themselves from that.
Yeah, that was a flop.
But this has a completely different...
I should point out, this is a render based on those patents. This is not...
Correct.
Yeah, but let's just think about a few different use cases out there. You have your enterprise people that could potentially use it in sales or something like that, or marketing or what have you. You have your creative folks, and you have just your regular... average people, consumers. All right. So if you look at those three different verticals, what are they using it for? The sales guys could
Same thing you use your smartphone for.
You beat me to my point. What's the point of this when the smartphone is probably going to do the exact same thing that this larger device can do and take up less real estate in my bag or in my pocket?
Well, we're already seeing people making these phones bigger and bigger. Apple's new XS Max.
The Note 9
are really on the edge of too big for this form factor, right?
Right. All right. I agree with that. So they don't need to make these much larger than that.
There's a desire, though, for a bigger screen.
Samsung's rumored to be working on it. I mean, they basically flat out admitted they're working on a dual screen device, too. It operates differently. But if you look at what Samsung's doing with DeX, the Note 9 plugs right into any Type-C monitor, becomes basically a computer. It has a pen. All computing is going down this road of making these things more powerful. The problem, I would say, with Samsung and Android is they have to hack around Android to get it to do what they want, where Microsoft is building experience natively.
Well, and you know who has a huge advantage is Apple. Ontech just reviewed the XS Max and said, these chips are almost as fast as desktop chips.
Sure.
Well, yeah. And Apple's about to do all of their own silicon.
And they'll probably add a pencil support in the coming years.
Yeah. So now that doesn't just because everybody says that's the next thing doesn't mean that consumers are going to say it, obviously. But you have to take a little bit of a chance. And just because I think this is legacy. I'm holding up a smartphone. I think that's a legacy design. And it's a real holdover to really the phone. It's based still on looking like a phone. And so that's why I say it makes sense to maybe think about, well, what would you want for a pocket computing device? But don't you like about this? What is wrong with this?
It just seems like it's trying to solve a problem that doesn't exist. And I
think you could say that about all technology, though. If you go back to
a lot of it, there's a lot of tech that's doing that, and it just sort of. I don't have a problem with trying to innovate, but I think there are a lot of times where these companies are just doing just too much. I'm like, really? That's not necessary. I mean, even when we look at the VR space from, you know, 2-3 years ago with wearing the headsets that you put your phone in and all of that and didn't have a controller that worked worth a dang, and they're supposedly iterating on that technology, but just how far is that going to go from a consumer standpoint? What are the applications for that? That's going to look good at the end of the ledger.
Is it too big?
I kind of like the idea of that though, because it they're bringing that technology to everyone. They're saying all you need is a phone and a piece of cardboard. I mean, that's what Google's kind of approach was at the beginning,
I thought that was cool.
Now, I don't think that's the end all.
Like they gave up.
Yeah, well, that's Google for you in a nutshell.
Yeah, I was going to say, Google's,
not don't be evil. That's cool, but we give up.
They have an attention span worse than like a 2-year-old. I mean, it's like Gmail has been the longest thing going that they have put out in search.
They're going to kill inbox.
Everything. Yep. This is what I say with like, you know, even with like the mesh networking that Google has, you know, their system works perfectly fine, but it's like they do a big launch for it and then Google Wi-Fi, you never hear about it again.
And then ignore it. Yeah.
To be fair,
that's the same thing with all their stuff.
virtual reality will be forever niche and related to gaming. And that's totally fine. It's very good at that. But the future that everybody else knows is the reality is mixed.
Augmented reality. Or mixed, as Microsoft calls it. Yeah. I agree completely.
I mean, Microsoft has been, upfront, they're trying to invent, and they may already be working on it, basically a system of goggles that switches between VR and mixed reality. The idea they tint when you want to do virtual, and then they go clear for augmented.
Yeah,
but
so
it's
going to
be the augmented reality. That's where that technology
I think people don't want. Imagine you're wearing these glasses, and all of a sudden they tint, and you can't see what's going on around you. That's just not a good user interface. So ultimately, people won't be doing that so much. Maybe if you're sitting in a chair at home and you're safe, you'll play a game.
It's funny, on the show The First on Hulu with Sean Penn.
I love that show, by the way.
They all have those sunglasses. They put them on, and they tint. They actually do augmented and virtual reality.
Yeah, he wants to show somebody a video of their son, and he takes his glasses off and says, here. And then he says, cue up, rewind, play. And the guy and the father's wearing the video, the glasses. And by the way, I want to point out that our guest last week or the week before, Amy Webb, the futurist, is the person who wrote the Bible for that show, The First, on what it would look like in 2030.
She did a great job.
Didn't she? It's very credible. It's kind of like Now, but a little bit
more. Just a little bit tweet.
Yeah. And they're all wearing, you notice, something in their ear.
Yeah.
So I do think that maybe that's the end game where the screen starts to kind of disappear and become part of your stuff. But we're not there yet. And then it makes sense there might be an interim device that is a little bit of a bigger screen, a little bit more capability. I don't know. I mean, I think your reaction, Ant, is really interesting because you're probably not alone that a lot of consumers are go, that? No, thanks.
Like, why?
I think that's common. But we can all go back to smartphones. I was using a Trio back in 2006, and I was like, this is the coolest thing in the world.
You know,
you get to spoil a computer. I showed all my friends. They could not care less.
Yeah.
They're like, and no one wanted to pay for data. No one got it. And now here we are. Everybody, if you don't have a smartphone, you're weird. So I find all technology seems unnecessary until everybody has it.
Yeah.
Clearly Microsoft's in a position. They lost mobile. They've lost the phone stuff. So they're asking the next question. All right, what comes next after the current, thing? And that's a hard question. I'm not saying this is necessarily the answer. I'm just saying that's they're trying to go ahead of the curve. And that's what they're trying to answer.
Every company in tech has to do that because you're only as good as your next product.
What I like about Microsoft is the attempt that they made for creators, like that Surface Studio that you have right there in front of you.
I love this thing.
I think that thing is just awesome for a content creator that can sit down and really immerse themselves into their work and into their content that they're trying to create. And I personally wish Microsoft would continue along that road and making this stuff more accessible to creators out there that are trying to get started, whether it's the Surface Book, just continue to make it robust and something that everybody can grab. Because every time I heard about the Surface Books in the last couple of years, they look great in their ads and all of the specs sound great, but it seems like every reviewer just poo-pooed them after, a couple weeks of use. The keyboard was this or that, or the fabric on it felt weird, and this was falling apart. The hinge wasn't just right. There was always something.
That's our job.
Why do I want to invest in that if everyone is complaining about it?
I got a computer. We're going to get back to 1809 in a second, but I got a computer for you. The HP Folio. It's a leather computer. How about that?
Yeah.
How about that?
This is a really cool.
It's pigskin, by the way, Ant. That's pigskin.
Yeah, just keep ruining pigskin for me.
Go ahead.
4 years ago, HP was a company I just was not interested in.
They've completely converted themselves, haven't they?
Their stuff now is so good. The Spectre series, Elite Books. I absolutely adore their devices.
I have the Spectre's T, the one with the copper, and I really love it.
Right.
I really love it.
And I'm just going to spoil, there's maybe some news in Spectre coming in a few weeks, too. That's
the partners with
really good stuff. But this one, the Spectre Folio, is a fascinating device. I have to tell people, when it comes out, go to Best Buy, check it out, because they'll have them on display.
Did you touch it? They announced it on Monday, the day before the Microsoft.
Yeah, I was there at the press event for that. Yeah, so I got to play with it. It's a really cool device.
How much is this thing?
starts at $12.99. It goes up to $14.99, which
that's actually not bad.
It's an executive PC, so it's kind of an M quality chip, probably.
It's a Whiskey Lake Y series, which, to their credit, HP told me they're like, this device has been in the works for years. But it's only this year's chips that they felt was good enough to actually include it. And they said it's a really good chipset.
Oh, you feel like it's fast enough? Did you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I got to use it. It's pretty good. But the 1499 is the option with LTE built in. It's supposed to get 18 hours battery life.
Oh, ooh. 14
gigabit data. It's SSD. You can get later a 4K display with it. It's pen and inking. It does all the form factors. It's a really sweet device. I love their keyboards. It's not going to be for everyone. As you described, it's for executives. It's meant for writing.
And TV stars like Rich Demura.
Yeah. I see, this is my problem. I cannot use a Windows computer because I edit video. And I feel like I have to have a MacBook Pro for that.
Yeah.
And it really comes down to, like, I love the Surface. My choice would be like a Surface, the original one. But I can't. Do it.
This is where we suffer as Apple fans, because only Apple makes the hardware, and there just really isn't the diversity that there is in the Windows world. And that's why, by the way, Windows reviewers are picky, because you can be. You have many, many, many choices. Yeah. And if you don't like...
It's kind of like Android, same thing. It's like, why are there, the Android fan base is so picky on all these different...
That's a good point.
It's because you have the choice.
Right.
And Apple... It's just you go in there and you look at the phone, you say that's what's available, and you get the next one.
Take it or leave it.
Yeah. Close enough.
Right. Don't like the touch bar? Too bad.
Right. You don't like having no home button?
Too bad. All right. So that is the new leather HP. This is not a case. This is the actual body of the computer.
Yeah. It's built right in. I mean, it's all around. It's really amazing engineering that went into it. Like, but it's very light. It's 2.6 pounds, I believe. It's thin.
Yeah, I'm
tempted. It's really neat how the screen pops forward. It's like a super thin display.
Yeah, they show it in one interesting. This is the interesting configuration where it's a kind of like you're watching a movie, but you still have a touchpad there. The keyboard is hidden behind it, but the touchpad.
And you
can
draw on it and ink.
Yeah.
It's kind of like how Studio operates a little bit too.
Yeah. I love this, whatever it is, 18 degree angle is just awesome. Yeah. It feels like a drafting table or a drawing board. It's really nice. Well, I might have to. When does this folio come out?
I believe probably November. It should be very soon, though. And it'll be at Best Buy, and you can order direct from HP.
And, of course,
I'm pretty sure I'll see HP next week because I'm attending Adobe Max.
They'll usually
have a presence there. But this particular device, I don't know if it really fits in, but we'll see. I got to play with the Scepters last year, and they were awesome.
I love my Spectre T. I have the first generation, and the problem was it didn't have touch at the time. It doesn't, but now it does. And
now you can get a stylus with them. And,
by the way, they run Linux so nice. I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
If you read to the end of the Wired article on this laptop, it says that HP considered going synthetic or vegan leather, but decided to go with genuine despite the added cost because the cowhide that they're using is a byproduct since they're sourcing it from a manufacturer that also uses cows for meat.
It's leftover meat.
And it says the leather can actually be reused when a customer has decided to move on from the laptop.
It's deconstructible. So
an iPhone case out of it.
HP is woke.
Are they building a robot like Apple did to take the leather off and reuse it?
Yes.
People still like leather, Tan said. There are customers who want innovation in the PC category. So we're doing something new.
The upside to it, I will say, is it doesn't scratch. Like Surface Laptop, you can scratch it pretty easily. Yeah. So it doesn't scratch.
That magnesium deposition does. Yeah, you can scratch that right
off. So this and it feels nice.
This will age nicely like all leather does. And it'll look like an old baseball mitt in a couple of years.
Right.
I'm going to rub it with neat's foot oil to really give it that patina.
Yes.
And maybe I'll wrap it around a baseball at night just to make sure the pocket is just so.
Right.
So headphones, three new Surface laptops, Surface Studio and then the Surface tablet and then the Surface laptop. Did they announce a new Surface Book as well? No.
No, Surface Book did not get a refresh or new SKU. So there's been rumors that they're going to do a black version, but they'll probably time that later on.
And then they announced, they talked a little bit about this weird Android Windows mix where you can display the screen from your Android phone on your Windows.
And this isn't really new. Dell does this with an app called Dell Connect, and it's actually not built by Dell. It's by another company. Dell licenses it and then puts their name on it. Acer is doing the same too. And that app is actually very good because what it does is it connects up through, it pairs by Bluetooth, but then it connects via Wi-Fi direct. And what's cool about that is it does all the same thing. You can stream apps from your phone to it. You can transfer photos. You can make phone calls. It's lightning fast and doesn't rely on an external network or cloud support. So you can even be on an airplane and use this thing direct. And so it's also better for security. Microsoft's not doing that. What they're doing is a version that connects up through Bluetooth and pairs that way. The pros of that is you can, of course, do the same thing. It also works with all hardware. If you go through the Wi-Fi direct method, the downside is you have to use modern hardware for it, and you have to start restricting stuff. You need the right drivers and everything. So that's the reason why Microsoft's not doing it. They want to hit all PCs to be able to do this. So it won't be as good as Dell Connect, but at the same time, it'll be free. It'll be part of all Windows, and it'll work on all PCs out there.
Is this going to be next year? Was this part of the Q1?
Yeah, 19H1. Yeah, that's probably the goal for it. Okay. Yeah.
Is this live? So I'm looking at the image that they showed at the event. Is that live? I mean, can I edit it?
Nope.
No, it's just an image.
Not yet. Oh, yeah. Right now, that's just a mock-up. So what they do, they did launch your phone. That's available now in the October update, where on Android, you can do text messaging and pull in all your photos, or at least photos from the last 20 or something like that. And you can drag and drop them to your other apps.
Interesting.
And modify
them. Apple has a lot of this capability with iPhones.
Right.
And Microsoft doesn't have a mobile. So do it with Android.
So it works with Android.
I love the
iOS.
Texting part is
I agree.
Unique because you know there's some apps that can do this, but I think that the fact that they're doing this makes it easier. And the 25 photos is kind of weird because you could just, I mean, if they're just going to Google Photos, you can easily pull up your web page that has those. But I think the texting is cool, and the fact that they're doing this is nice because I don't know about the apps. I don't necessarily need access to my Android apps on my computer.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure what the use case for that is, but I think that the texting for sure is great. And were you able to play with that at all? Is it just as smooth as
it's not working, is it?
Yeah, not working code yet. Yeah. But but that was the same thing at Build. They announced your phone and then it's out now with its current feature set. So they could turn this around in just a couple months. I'm sure they'll have this. What they're doing isn't like rocket science, it's not crazy. But it'll be an all right solution. I agree, though, running Android apps. Like, I use the Dell Connect version, which is even better because it's faster with Wi-Fi Direct. It's okay. I mean, it's not like running BlueStacks and Android Direct, right? Get notifications direct through the Dell version, which is kind of cool. So if someone, you know, messaged me on Instagram, I would actually get like a physical notification on my PC and I can respond to it directly without taking my phone out of my bag. That's kind of cool. We'll have to see if Microsoft does something similar. The downside for this is iOS. The Dell Connect works with iOS, but the phone has to be unlocked and on for it to work.
Okay.
Which is really not practical at all, right?
No.
So those are the downsides.
But I feel like if you want that tight integration with iOS, you're going to have the other
Geico, Apple
iPad, and you're going to have a lot of that stuff anyway. I think this is for like everyone else, you know, that the business community, the people that have the Android and the,
Where's your whiskey, Ant? You usually have a whiskey around there.
Well, sir, you did ask.
Wow, take a sip. Because we're going to take a break. Ant Pruitt, Tech Republic from KTLA, Rich DeMuro. And, of course, from Windows Central, the great Daniel Rubino. It's good to have all three of you. I slept nice last night on my Casper. I hope you did. You don't have a Casper? What, are you nuts? Casper is the mattress. Casper is an online retailer, premium mattresses for a fraction of the cost, and they are totally revolutionizing the mattress industry by eliminating the middleman, the showrooms, the resellers. Those people market up a lot. When I found out how much, I was kind of aghast. Well, take out that extra markup. Get a great mattress, obsessively engineered mattress, at a price much closer to cost, a fair price. The original Casper mattress we have combines multiple supportive memory foams for a sleep surface with just the right sink and just the right bounce. It's nice to have both. You kind of sink into it, but at the same time, it's firm. It supports you. And this is really important. I'm learning more and more how important this is. It's breathable, which means you sleep cool. Regulating your temperature through the night is one of the most important things to having a good night's sleep. Melatonin actually lowers your body temperature. I didn't know this, and that's really important part of sleeping well. Casper mattress does it for you. Long-lasting comfort and support. Plus, you buy it online, and oh, I know what you're saying, but wait a minute. I haven't even tried it. Well, you get to try it risk-free for 100 nights. If at any point they offer free delivery and painless returns, any point in that 100-day period, just say, yeah, it's not for me. They come, they get it, and they refund you every penny. Casper mattresses are awesome, and there isn't any risk because you get to try it for 100 nights. Of course, they're made in the U.S. They uphold the highest environmental production standards. One of the things that's great about it, there's no odor when you open it up. By the way, it's amazing. It comes in a curiously compact box. You open the box, they give you a little. Here's my demo. I'm in my jammies because I'm planning to sleep on this thing. You open up the box.
One of the funniest videos ever.
And watch, the mattress just goes and expands. This was a king-size mattress, I think, or was it a queen? Maybe it was a queen. It expands, and there you go. And watch how comfy this is. Yeah. Go to casper.com/twit. Use the promo code TWIT, and you'll save $50 towards select mattresses. casper.com/twit. Promo code TWIT at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. Free shipping and returns to the U.S. and Canada. casper.com/twit. Get a great night's sleep. That's so important. As I get older, I realize that's kind of all that really matters in life is a good night's sleep. We had a fun week this week on Twit. And in fact, we've made you a little promotional video for your delectation watch.
Previously on Twit.
Just got it.
Uh-oh.
Just got it. This is a test of the... You got it, too. All my phones are going off. Oh, no. Help me. Help me. Oh, my God.
This Week in Google.
I brought Matthew on because of this article.
Explain yourself, Matthew.
Explain yourself in this Columbia Journalism. Is the podcast bubble bursting?
Security Now.
We're going to take a look at this recent massive Facebook security breach, how a very clever leveraging of a subtle mistake was turned into a mess for Facebook and what lessons we can learn from it.
Tech News Weekly.
The big news this morning involves a report released by Bloomberg that illustrates how Chinese spies reportedly have hacked their way into the supply chain of nearly 30 U.S. companies.
If true, then this is basically going to lead to huge numbers of companies having to rip and replace motherboards. If untrue, then two journalists have just ruined their professional careers.
Twit, we read the tech news, so you don't have to.
Thank Ian Thompson in a nutshell. Somebody's in trouble. Don't know who, but somebody is in trouble. Speaking of trouble, Microsoft also at this event, Daniel, announced that they were, as of last Tuesday, going to make 1809, the new feature update, the fall feature update, available. It was one of those things where you have to be a seeker to get it initially. I was a seeker. You go out to the Windows update and you see if it's there, and it is. And I install it on my Surface Studio, on my Microsoft Surface Go. I install it on my Lenovo. No problems. No, everything went fine. And then Microsoft said, whoops, people are reporting data loss installing this update. One person on the Microsoft boards mentioned 220 gigabytes in his documents folder gone.
Oh, shit.
Gone. So Microsoft said, well, we're not going to push it out just yet.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Microsoft did not need this news. I mean, no company wants this news, but yeah, this is not good. I think it highlights some flaws in the Insider program. Although,
yes, because
fair,
didn't this Wasn't this tested by millions of people? They've been testing 1809 for 6 months.
Yeah, and now, you know, to be fair, I never experienced this problem. It was posted in the hub. Some users did have a problem with it. It wasn't upvoted and caught. Now, what usually happens is they have a ring in the insider program called release preview. And so 2 weeks before the final build goes out to the masses, it goes to release preview. That's the whole point of it. So it goes out to a wider cohort of testers. And they're supposed to catch last things. They didn't do that this time, which was weird. And to be fair, it was like, okay, well, this update doesn't seem too crazy anyway. There's not like a huge, there's a lot of under the hood stuff. But they skipped the release preview. And now it's starting to look like it's coming back to bite them. Now, I don't think, there's no evidence that this was the insider team making this decision. I don't think they make that call to be like, this is hired. This is the engineers. This is executives who are like, all right,
this is Donna Sakar.
Yeah, I don't think like Donna was like, oh, it's good enough. She doesn't make that call. She just runs the program.
She runs the insider program, yeah.
Yeah, but it's clear that the data missed things. And well, listen, Microsoft's trying to do this huge weird thing of building an operating system openly in the public, letting people test it and getting feedback. And it'll definitely be bumps in the road because no one's ever done it at this scale. Having said that, I think they clearly made some mistakes here, and I'm sure there's going to be some meetings and a lot of yelling to make sure something like this doesn't happen.
Most people didn't get it because it wasn't pushed yet. It probably would have been pushed Tuesday on Patch Tuesday.
Correct. Yep.
Did you install it?
I did not.
You're a smart man.
Well, see, here's the thing, Leo. I learned my lesson about being a seeker because do you remember when the iPhone had the update disabled, it just totally screwed up. So I'm the kind of guy, when I hear there's an iPhone update, I'm pressing that button a million times to get it. Well, I did that, and my phone was disabled for 24 hours because I had no cellular connection whatsoever. Yep. And so ever since then, yes, I'm a seeker, but a more of a casual, okay, I'll go like with Mojave. I got it, a week later. You know what I mean?
Yeah, wait a little bit. That update, we were in the old studio. And I literally had my finger poised over the update button. And I think it was Josh Windisch, or no, maybe it was Chad. Who was it? Jeff Needles. That's who it was. Came screaming down the hall saying, don't!
Stop!
Because it did him.
So ever since then, I've been very cautious with updates, and I love updates. I mean, to me, as a nerd, I always say an update is like Christmas. I love it. You're getting something new. It's a new feature. It's something new, no matter how small it is. But definitely, like my wife, her iPhone, I think she just updated her watch to iOS or to watchOS 5 like yesterday.
Smart woman.
So,
The old rule was don't do the first one. Don't do the second one. Do the third update that fixes the things that the second update broke on the first one.
Right.
By then, it's probably...
Skeptic much.
It's probably, that's Alex Lindsay's rule.
If you're in IT, you just wait a year.
Yeah. Like, well...
Yeah. At any major company, it's like, when are we going to get this?
Never. Never. How about you, Ann? You're not a Windows. You don't use Windows, do you, Ann? Or no, you do.
Yes, sir. I use Windows.
What is that thing behind you? That's not a Mac, that thing?
This is all
beast?
Windows, baby.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I haven't really been into the whole beta release stuff for a long time.
But this was a release. This wasn't a beta release.
But then I was going to say, even now with running Windows 10, a lot of the updates, I can't say I've noticed much because I spend most of my time in the apps. When I'm sitting at this rig, I'm sitting here with Premiere. I'm sitting here with After Effects, Lightroom.
You might as well be on a Mac, frankly.
And that's all I'm worried about. Yeah. And every now and then I get some annoying notification popping up about email or something like that. But for the most part, I don't even see Windows. I just see... whatever Adobe has in front of me or whatever the apps that I'm running at the time.
So what is new in 1809, Daniel, that I should be looking for? Because I agree with you, Ant. 1803 at least introduced the timeline, which I really like.
Timeline's
nice
pretty
feature.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, 1809 is not – I don't know. It depends what you consider cool. For me, it's – I use snipping the snipping tool all the time.
Yeah.
And they reworked that. So that is now a UWP app, but it's much more powerful. You can just do the, Win Shift S, and you can screen cap it. It has a cloud clipboard. It can save it across devices, but you can also open it in a direct editor that allows inking directly so you can draw on it. And then it has a share feature so you can just send it off to email quickly. It's snipping tool for the modern world, basically.
Okay.
For the new experiences that they're building.
This is a sign of our times, by the way. When Mojave and the new Windows update, the two biggest features are what you can do when you take a screenshot. Because Mojave is kind of the same thing. It's like, I got it, and the first thing I noticed when I took a screenshot, I was like, oh my gosh, I can mark it up on the screenshot. Amazing.
The new phone book is here. So I finally gave up on dark mode. I feel bad because that was the number one thing in Mojave,
right.
And I used it on all my Macs, and I'm just it's too dark.
See, so, I'm still trying to use it because I'm like, this is what's new. Use it.
You gotta use it. Exactly.
But I'm not in love with it. I don't hate it, but I don't know. Like, I kind of want to switch back, but I'm not going to because I feel like I'm getting my money's worth.
Was free.
The
update was. Sorry.
I actually disabled the Microsoft Ink feature when it was added.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I don't use
it. It doesn't necessarily work well with the Wacom devices that I've used, so I just turned that off. So that's the only time I think about the actual Windows operating system is as soon as my Wacom starts wigging out, I'm wondering, did that thing get re-enabled? So I have to go and dig for it and take that little box to turn it off.
You know, I mean, this is a pad. I have a touch screen. I have a thing, but I know, you know, this Windows Ink workspace. What? I've never used that. What is that? What? Huh? Come on, man. What do I want that for? So you're right. It's not the first thing I run to. I do like Timeline though, because that lets me go back through not only the applications I have open, but websites I've been to, you know, things I've looked at, and I really like that. Documents I've worked on. That is a very nice feature. Plus, it exposes the desktop feature, which is really nice.
And that works with Android now. If you use the Microsoft Launcher, if you're part of the 5.0 beta, which is really, really nice, you can now, and if you use like Edge on Android and everything, it syncs up your Android history to Timeline as well.
Wow.
And so you get that cross. Yeah. And so you can view your PC history on your phone, which is really neat. If you're working behind a computer all day, running out for dinner, you want to show someone that article. My favorite feature about Timeline is search. You just type in a couple of keywords and it goes back months and it'll figure out, oh, this is the article that you read. And that to me is really cool. There's a lot of stuff in 1809. It's just a lot of smaller things. Changes to Edge, of course. There's a lot of changes that went on in there for some inking support, more changes in the way the menus look. Now they're sensitive. So if you use a mouse cursor, the menus are small and compact versus if you go to touchscreen, they automatically are larger. So they're touch enabled. So there's just more refinements, I would say, to the system. There just isn't like a huge feature. And so I think it's what everybody's looking for. But we're kind of at the stage now where we're just doing refinements. Plus, they're working on the back end of the operating system to make for the next, you know, Windows Core OS, basically.
I think I open Edge about twice a year.
Try it.
It's only for the Apple events.
You know what? I'm using it. I use it a lot now. I even use it on my Android device. That is saying something.
Wow.
Yeah,
I always feel so bad opening up Edge and then downloading Chrome.
Well, the really annoying thing is every time you use Edge to do anything in Google land, Google would say, would you like to use a safe browser instead? I find it so condescending and so annoying. And yeah. I wish they'd stop. No, I'm using Edge. I'm fine. Thanks, Mom.
I use Edge on iOS. So.
Oh, no, come on.
Oh, man.
I know, crazy talk.
That's
crazy.
Really?
Get dark mode. It's got ad blocker built in. It's nice.
Dark mode. So Tuesday we will hear. I can't think of a single product announcement that has been more leaked ever.
Yes.
Samsung does a terrible job of keeping this stuff quiet too. But we know more about the Pixel 3 than it's ridiculous. Now, Ant, you had an interesting theory. You think that Google's leaking this stuff.
Yeah, and I can't necessarily say I follow that logic, but there's no way a company as large as Google or Alphabet or whatever you're calling them these days has this much of a security problem as far as things just that are internal just leaking out on a regular, it's almost like a regular basis now. I'm waiting for the next notification to pop up on my phone in the hour that says, here's another Pixel 3 view.
I woke up this morning and a Gadget had bought one.
You know, what sense is that? I don't get it. So I'm assuming that PR figured, you know what, let's try to, you know, put a little more buzz out there before the show. But
is that to dampen iPhone sales? I mean, what's the problem?
I don't think so. No, they can't. I mean, they sold 4 million of these Pixels last year. That's not even a blip on the radar for the average person. So it doesn't, all the PR in the world does not matter. I mean, people, they don't even understand what a Pixel is. And so I don't think that's it. I think it really comes down to, you know, there are in the works before launch, there's, you know, they have to make documents, they have to make review documents, they have to get the product to places, they have to give, they give briefings to certain reporters on things. And those are all points of failure that could potentially happen. And I think that's what we're seeing here. Getting the phone a couple weeks early, I mean, look, it was one shop in Hong Kong. I mean, we've seen Best Buy sell, they sold the Chromecast early, you know, the new one. So it's just, there's a lot, you know, in this world that we live in, if you're launching products kind of day and date, like right after the announcement, there's a lot bigger chance for things to happen. Even with Apple, we see this stuff happening, and they have the best PR in the business.
Fair enough.
Seems like Apple is really a lot more locked down when it comes to what is being shared to the public and the masses.
It doesn't get leaked out until it reaches the supply chain.
But they do get a lot of leaks. Now.
They do get leaks once China's got it.
I think they kind of put more of the leaks out there than Google would. You know, Google, it's like they would. I don't know. I feel like the Pixel is such not a issue for like most people. You know, it's like it's not like my mom is sitting there like excited about the new Pixel, although she is because she has one. So I made her get one.
Okay.
So she actually is, but. My point is, even as a Pixel user, she doesn't even really understand like what makes the next one better. So for the average person, like I think they'd be more interested in what's, you know, the new iPhone. Obviously, iPhone rumors are huge. Samsung, and Samsung, to a lesser extent, but those are big as well. So I don't know. I just think it's just Google. They're the ones that own the search engine, and they're getting this stuff leaked on their search engine.
So
I'm probably the one Pixel person that's had both the original Pixel and Pixel 2.
Oh, I've had them all.
Give a crap about Pixel 3.
I love the Pixel.
The only reason I want the Pixel 3 is for the speed, because the 2 has slowed down to me.
Has it really?
Yeah.
That's always the knock on Androids, is they get slower over time.
If you did the first update to 9, it was like it was really bad, and then it came back. You know,
I have a Pixel 2 XL, and I'm very happy with it, and I haven't noticed a speed drop. And one of the reasons I pull it out a lot is the camera.
Yep.
And many agree that even with the iPhone XS Max, even with the iPhone XS. that this phone has a better camera, even though it's a year old now. So I tell you what, I'm going to be paying attention to on Tuesday, and I'm going to be here 8 in the morning with a live stream.
Hard life, man.
That's a hard life, man. 8 in the morning. I'm an old man. I've arranged my life so that I don't have to show up till 11 every morning.
Hey, I salute you, Mr. LaForce.
I only work 4 days a week. To make me come in at 8 in the morning, that's unhuman. So you're flying to New York for this, Rich.
I'm going tomorrow.
There you go. Your mic fell out.
Oh, yeah, sorry, Mike.
So, okay, I'll tell you what I'll be looking for, and you can look for it for me. What's the camera? Is it new? Is it different? Is it better? Apparently, according to the phone that was sold in Hong Kong, it's the 13.2 pixels or something. It's not the 12 megapixel.
They added a megapixel?
Let's see. What is it? It's a 12. I'm sorry. And Gadget says it's a 12.2 megapixel main camera, two 8 megapixel front facing cameras. So
that's
it has the wide selfie.
Yeah, for the XL.
Yeah. It's a 6.3 inch screen, Qualcomm 845 chipset. The one that he bought in Hong Kong, This is Engadget editor Richard Lai says it only had 4 gigs of RAM. That's a little lightweight, but there may be other models. Remember, he just got one. It does have a notch, which is so disappointing.
I don't care.
Yeah, people
have
been ripping on that notch.
Yeah, I don't care. I mean, I'm fine with the notch.
Well, it doesn't bother me on an iPhone. I understand why. The idea is you don't want any bezels, so you have to have something so that you can put cameras there.
It's the chin. It's the combo of both.
But that's the problem. They still have a chin. It's not like they got rid of the chin.
Yeah, I have a beef with the chin. If you're going to cut something down, cut that away a little bit.
Yeah.
Just a little bit, because I don't mind bezels to an extent. Yeah.
I mean, we don't understand the manufacturing vicissitudes, the exigencies. You know, there may be reasons you have to have some, you can't have a screen go all the way down there. They also took out the headphone jack last year, and it bothers the hell out of me.
Yeah.
But see, the fact that they're including the USB-C headphones now, I think is huge, because that was a big sore point for me, even though I use Bluetooth headphones, but I still sometimes just like to have something. Let's say you're doing a Skype call and you want to just plug in to your phone, you know, it's like, or listening to music, or your batteries are dead. And the fact that you can't find a decent pair of USB-C cheap kind of headphones on anywhere, this is big to me. So the fact that they're in the box, I think, is very nice. Otherwise, this phone seems so unexciting. I mean, I love the Pixel. Believe me, I think it's my favorite phone out of almost every device out there due to the camera. But I don't see this as being any sort of, there's nothing they're adding to this as far as I can tell that makes this any better than the iPhone. The iPhone is still a better creator device, you know, where you can, you know, record videos and stuff like that, that, you know, edit stuff on it. This is just a great camera. It's like a one-trick pony once again. Yeah. So, I don't know.
But it's also, and I always say this, it's the, if you're going to get an Android phone, get it from Google. At least you know you'll get the updates. You'll be secure, relatively secure. That's the big challenge for me with Android. I love Android, but it feels like it's dangerous to use an Android phone compared to an iPhone. But I like the flexibility. I like widgets. I just think Android is a better operating system if they could just, gosh. The other thing that Google does that Apple stopped doing is Apple stopped putting a headphone adapter in the box. Google is going to have a USB-C to 3.5 millimeter dongle. You know.
A wireless charging, too. That's a good addition.
Wireless will be nice, because the current Pixel 2 does not have that.
I have the Pixel 2. It's a fine phone, but I find it extremely boring. And besides taking good photos, I just got really bored with it. And that's not even a negative in the sense that I feel like this is just like what we're talking about, Pixel 3. The industry, the technology has stabilized, it's plateaued.
Yeah.
And so the returns
for
on...
Sure.
Yeah, so each year it's like, even you know, this year with the iPhone. It's not bad. It's just that means it's like how I don't get that excited over new TVs or a new refrigerator.
Right.
You know, 20 years ago, my refrigerator would have been rocket science. It makes ice, you know?
Right. Whoa!
But now it's like, okay, it's a fridge,
it's amazing.
Right? It's like this with phones now. And I feel kind of bad ripping on like the Pixel 3 because it's I'm sure it's a fine phone. It's hard to get blown away by this stuff. Like wireless charging, okay, I had it in 2012 with my Lumia, you know.
Throw a party.
Google phones have even had wireless charging. I mean,
that's the challenge. Like for me, like, you know, if we're doing a story for, you know, Mass America the way I am on local news.
Yeah.
It's like, well, how do I even say like literally I will have this phone in hand on Tuesday. And it's like, how do I say what's new about this thing? I mean, you have wireless charging and the camera is just as good. Except now you can take a wide selfie. I mean, that's really kind of a tough sell.
All right, I'm going to try to help you here. Thank God I don't have to do this anymore, but I'll try to help you. So one thing that means is it's no longer a metal back. If you're going to have wireless charging, they're going to have eliminated the metal back. So that's interesting. It's a new here's
so
the,
it's more what it's, it can break so more now shatter, basically.
Yeah, so yeah. It's more yeah. more more.
So
vulnerable.
That's actually important.
Yeah. I here was a big thing people have seemed to have forgotten, but when the Pixel 2 came out, the XL especially, people were saying this OLED screen is awful. It's got burn-in. Remember that?
For weeks, people were...
Blue hue.
Yeah. And it isn't, let's awful, face though, it, it's not a great
the,
screen.
No.
So I'll be interested if Google's fixed that problem, because they, you know, I think it was a supply issue that Apple and Samsung had all the OLED screens and Google got what was left over. maybe they've solved that problem. So I'll be curious to see. And you know, my test on the screen is with scrolling. If you scroll on the Pixel 2, it just it can't handle it. Colors get distorted in weird ways and stuff. It's just not a great screen. So I'm hoping that will be fixed. I do believe Google has the best camera technology. I don't know how you explain to mom and pop America, but how computational photography is changing.
The only way to explain it is to take the Samsung approach and make it all about that dual selfie camera, because that's the stuff that sells.
Yeah.
Apple's
doing that too with the portrait mode. I mean, they finally have a slider in there that can change the background. That's pretty hard to explain, though, why that's a good thing.
Even saying the word bokeh is, you know, it's like, I mean, and I always say it's a blurry background, because I do love that effect. Blurry and people background. Love that.
Yeah, people do. Yeah.
I mean, it's just, you know, it's one of those things where do you buy a phone based on the fact that it does that? And I guess Apple has proven that they've gotten that feature, because Samsung had that feature for a while, right?
Oh, you had the slider forever. Yeah.
Right. And once Apple did it, it was like the same thing with wireless charging. It's been on Samsung phones that's going back, I can't even remember how long, a while. And as soon as Apple did it, it became exciting. You know, it's like now you've got, and wireless is everywhere. And the same thing with Apple Pay. You know, it's like you've got, once Apple Pay came into play, everyone is now talking about mobile payments. When, you know, you had Samsung Pay, you had Google Pay, I feel like was around even before Apple Pay.
Here's where your audience is going to be so excited. The new Pixel charging stand.
I'm excited about this personally.
I actually want that, Mr. LaPorte.
Because think about it. Now you can have this on your bedside table.
You know, I already have one. I've had one for years.
Well, so have I, but it plugs in.
No, but I mean, I have a wireless easel that I charge all my wireless phones on, the Samsung,
not your Pixel,
the
2.
iPhone, but not the Pixel
don't
2.
Don't keep your phone by your bed. That's even the better choice. And just get a good night's sleep. And
are you one of those people?
Wait a minute.
You lock all your hardware up when you go to bed?
Okay, so just confession, I was actually a sleep technician for many years in New York City while Cornell Medical School.
What?
And so that's what I did for a living.
You're a sleep expert.
So I know a lot about sleep. And so I don't keep any technology in my bedroom.
Okay.
A TV. That's
okay.
It.
This whole blue light thing, though, that's completely a scam, right?
No, that's 100% accurate.
I don't sleep anyway. I hibernate like once a month, so it don't really matter to me.
I will say
I've been up since 4 a.m. today, if that helps. So
I sleep like crap. That's really the problem. That's why
the bedtime thing. Nice where you kind of wake up and you want to look at your phone and it's all dark and it doesn't show your notifications. I really do like that. And Pixel is doing the same thing. They don't, if it's on Do Not Disturb now, it doesn't show you notifications. Yes. So I like that. Yes. You know, I think that's smart because we have to protect ourselves from ourselves.
Yes.
Mental health.
But I think I've gotten to the point where I have started protecting myself, because if, you know, I might sleep at the most about 4 hours a night.
You got to talk to this guy, Daniel. He's a trained professional.
You know? That's not healthy.
So let me just ask you, Daniel, having spent all this time at the Cornell Sleep Center, do you sleep really well?
I do. I post it sometimes because I use a Fitbit, and Fitbit has hands down the best sleep tracking tech that's not in a hospital, in my opinion.
You got to get this. I'm going to get you one of these. This is the Oura Ring, O-U-R-A. This does temperature as well, and because it's on your finger, it's got the two arteries here. I think this is the best sleep tracker. And I've been using the Serta one that's under your mattress. I've got an Apple Watch. Sure. I've tried all of it. But the problem is I don't want to wear a bracelet. I don't want to wear a Fitbit. This thing, I don't mind. It's not, I mean, I'd like to not wear a ring to bed, but I do. Yeah. And it gives me great reason. We had if you want to find out more, we had the CEO on yesterday on the new screensavers. But I've been wearing this for a month, and I loved it. Kevin Rose told me about this. It's OuraRing.com.
I'll definitely check that out. Yeah, that's where a lot of this technology is going into. It's interesting stuff. It helps people. I mean, what Apple's doing, what Fitbit's doing, they're about to launch their new it detects sleep apnea, basically. It pauses breathing while you're sleeping.
Huge.
Huge.
Yeah, but do you have to wear your Apple Watch?
Well, so the Apple Watch is going to detect AFib, which is significant.
Yeah.
The AFib affects between 2 and 6 million people in the U.S.
So you have to wear the Apple face mask then for the...
Right. Okay. But the Fitbit with sleep apnea is between 20 and 30 million people.
Oh, it's a huge
and if you
one.
Get, and yeah, if you get diagnosed with sleep apnea, we automatically check for AFib. So you get...
Right.
I find the Fitbit system better.
How can it detect sleep apnea?
Has an SpO2 sensor in it, so it actually can detect your oxygen level, and they calibrate it along with your heart rate and everything.
That's interesting.
And they're using an algorithm. Yeah.
Wait, which one has this? I missed it. Which one has the O2?
Versa has it, Ionic, and I think that's it for right now.
So the Versa, I didn't realize that. So it because I wore that for a long time.
Yeah. It launches in November in beta.
It's not out yet. Yep.
Oh wow, that's so it's gonna turn it. They're gonna turn on the feature inside existing devices.
Exactly.
Oh, that's big. That's really big.
Yeah.
Very nice.
I didn't know you were a sleep technician. That's awesome. Yeah.
It was a great job.
I got so many questions for you.
See, don't you think it's funny? Don't you think it's funny that Apple is not talking about, because Apple is all about fitness and health with the watch right now, but they have not mentioned a word about sleep because the Apple Watch can't do that. I mean, it can with third-party apps, but it's
just
kind of
funny.
But
that's the question. In fact, we were talking about that yesterday with the CEO of Aura. He's actually breathing a sigh of relief that Apple hasn't released an app for sleep on your watch, because
they would do a good job.
They will.
Yeah,
though.
Why haven't they?
They
you
will.
Think they will.
They will when they get the battery up. They can't.
Yeah.
That's the problem. People have to charge it overnight.
Exactly. Yeah. And they don't want to bring that problem to the forefront, because now your Apple Watch is just fine if you're wearing it throughout the day.
Right.
But like with the Fitbit, one of the things I love about the Versa is that I literally, it's every 4 days you charge it. And so you can use it as a sleep. But one night a week, you don't get the sleep, or you just charge it while you take a shower or whatever.
Right.
But it's Apple doesn't want to bring any of this to the conversation right now until they're ready.
That makes sense. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Also expected on Tuesday, a screen with the Google Assistant in it. They call it the Google Home Hub. Lenovo, JBL, and others have already done Google Homes with built-in screens. This will be the first one from Google. This is a leaked mock-up or a leaked image, or I don't know. People who've used the Lenovo like it. I think we reviewed the Lenovo.
Huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you add a screen, I have the Amazon Echo show.
I love the show. Yeah.
Yeah. As soon as you add a screen to that device, it changes it so dynamically.
Yeah.
The ability to call up my Ring, my front doorbell, and get a live feed is
I love that.
And plus, that's just how we work, because talking to a computer is still weird. But when you get that visual feedback and you get to see the weather forecast, everything clicks a little bit more instead of memorizing everything it's being spoken back to.
This will have YouTube versus the show, which doesn't the show not have YouTube?
It had YouTube. No. Then they kicked YouTube off. Then YouTube came back. Then I think it's gone again. I can't remember. It's Amazon and Google don't seem to like each other too much.
No.
But
again, this is another device that's pushing us into that Google, or you have to choose.
Do you want to be silo. Google? That's right.
It's a silo. And this is pushing us, because that this is going to work with Nest, but probably not with the Ring, I'm guessing.
Oh, it'll work with the Ring. Because Amazon.
You think so?
Well, does Amazon bought Ring? No.
Yep.
Amazon did, but Google isn't. They probably don't like Ring.
Well, I don't know. Right. That's interesting. Show works with our Nest, doesn't it? I think it does. Oh, it's so good. You're right. That's the problem. Yeah. And consumers go, screw it. I'm going to buy the Amazon thing and all the things that Amazon makes.
Right.
Or I'm going to buy the Google thing and all the thing Google makes. They're not going to spend the time saying, will the Nest work with the Echo?
Right.
They're not going to bother. They just say, and then there's Apple. There's also going to be a new Chrome tablet, the Pixel Slate. There's nothing. I'm going to get up at 8 a.m. and I could just be reading this article from The Verge.
We'll
just have more specs.
Yeah.
Specs and prices.
I was going to say, there was a conspiracy theory that these leaks were purposefully wrong. That everything like the Pixel 3 was like...
Wouldn't that be wild?
That wasn't. But now I think it is just too much stuff out there.
Yeah.
Like if it is, it's like the biggest PR stunt ever.
Yeah.
Okay. And I would give them their credit for that.
I want somebody to do
a bunch of stuff, and then all of a sudden you're like, man, we don't have this huge bucket at the top of this
pixel. Throw it away.
We're not doing it. Notch, you suck.
We're putting
the headphone jack back. Take that.
I would bow down.
I would buy five.
That would be amazing.
I would say, I'll just to honor your, for some reason, even though they're doing apparently a Pixel Slate tablet, they're also going to update the Pixel Book. I like the Pixel Book. I'm a Chrome OS guy. Sometimes, not all the time. Maybe like Pixel Buds. That was a flop. I hate it. Those Pixel Buds were terrible, but maybe they'll have new ones. A little update for Chromecast. There will not be an Android Wear watch from Google this year. I think we know that. The company told Tom's guide.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, this has really been a... I like it. It's a strong platform, but it's just died on the vine.
They need it. I mean, with what... I feel like at this point, even though I like Android slightly better, the Apple Watch is really so interesting to me right now.
Yeah.
And really almost vital because of the fitness aspects and the tracking and the notifications and the fact that I can't really get something very similar on Android at this point that's as good. And I'm sure the Galaxy Watch, I mean, it's, you know, it has some aspects, but it's just not as polished, you know?
Yeah. No, I'm with you. They did release the latest Android, an update to Android Wear, which people really like.
Yeah.
But you want to buy
a Samsung Fossil? Watch has gotten good reviews, but it kind of mostly works at Samsung.
I have a Samsung Gear 3 Frontier, which is not the latest, but it's, I really like it. But notice I never wear it because I have the Apple Watch, and the Apple Watch really now is coming to its own, I think.
They've nailed it.
Yeah. Between that and Fitbit, because Fitbit is, I think, pretty average. Regular people, right?
It's a lot less
expensive.
Comes at all
different price points. Yeah, it's way cheaper.
Yeah.
I personally don't like the Apple Watch because it's trying to be too much. I don't want a second phone on my wrist, but I get it for the people that do want that. Right. I think they've really nailed it. I prefer Fitbit because I like the health.
You're a sleep expert.
And I'm a sleep expert, right?
I do think the Fitbit Versa is a great watch for everyone else that's not Apple. You know what I mean? If you're not,
exactly.
Because
it
does a lot of the same things, but it doesn't, you know.
You tempted me with that sleep apnea thing. That's tempting. Yeah.
That is interesting.
I have a wife, so I don't need to get that.
Yeah, she'll tell you.
Big elbow in the ribs probably be as good as that watch. Our show today brought to you by Stamps.com. We're fans of Stamps.com because, frankly, I love the idea that I could do everything on demand, right? We live in an on-demand world, including everything I would do at the U.S. Post Office. I can buy and print U.S. postage on demand. I get with Stamps.com, we get this nice USB scale, so I always know exactly how much postage to put on there. No more guessing. No more putting extra stamps on or, worse, sending something postage due. You get all the services of the post office right from your desk 24/7 when it fits your needs. Any class of mail, the mailman comes and picks it up. You can create your account on Stamps.com in minutes. It's not a postage meter. There's no equipment to lease, no special ink, no long-term commitments. You already have everything you need, your computer and your printer, and they'll send you that digital scale. It even makes suggestions. You could save money if you sent this media mail. It'll print out your return address, your company logo. It'll take the address from your contact list. If you're selling on Amazon or eBay or Etsy, it'll automatically fill in the form sending international mail. You even get discounts you can't get at the post office. I mean, it really is just, if you're doing mailing for your business of any kind, Stamps.com. In fact, if you go to Stamps.com and use Twit, you're going to get a really nice offer that includes $55 of free postage. You'll get a digital scale. You'll get a 4-week trial. This is a very nice offer. What do? You go to stamps.com, you click the microphone in the upper right, and you enter the offer code TWIT. If you've been thinking about trying stamps.com, this is a great time to do it. Maybe you're going to mail out holiday cards this year. Now would be a good time to go to stamps.com, click the microphone, and enter TWIT. Stamps.com. We're doing good here. We've covered the 1809. We've covered the new surfaces. Amazon raising the minimum wage. They've been getting so much heat as Jeff Bezos becomes the richest man in the world. Their poor workers are suffering, so they've raised the minimum wage to $15 for all U.S. employees. And then they cut stock options. You know, it's got to come out of somewhere, not out of Jeff's pocket. Monthly bonus is gone. I guess there's nothing much to say about that.
This was, I believe, a ploy for Amazon to fend off unionization of its workers.
Oh. Yeah. Mm. Mm. Interesting. Interesting. Wouldn't be surprised. Facebook is briefing Department of Homeland Security officials about that breach. They're concerned that there might be a backlash in Washington. It's bad enough. Mark had to go testify once. He doesn't want to go back. I don't blame him. In an onstage interview Monday with the Wall Street Journal as part of Ad Week in New York City, Facebook's Vice President of Marketing Solutions, Carolyn Everson, compared hackers, the hackers who broke in, to an odorless, weightless intruder that walked in. None of the hackers I know, but okay.
Isn't it the whole idea of intrusion?
They were odorless and weightless. That's why we didn't discover it. They were odorless and weightless.
Oh, man.
Okay. Let's see. What else? The feds have, we now know this happened a while ago, I think back in August, forced an iPhone 10 owner to unlock his phone with his Face ID. The investigation was a child abuse investigation. Forbes has the exclusive on it. First known case in which law enforcement used Face ID to open a suspect's phone. However, the thing I found interesting in this article was this is now kind of status quo in search warrants, that they're having the judge, or they're writing it up in such a way that they can do this. It's in the actual search warrant that they will be asked to unlock, and they have to unlock their phone.
I think the
a pen.
Well, you can use a pin too. Actually, that's a really good question. Which the courts?
Right. Well, that's the,
But the courts, you know, it's
courts
unclear.
Can't compel you. They can't compel you.
Well, that's the theory. Thing, is, it's coming out of your brain versus
that's the theory
using your face.
That's the theory that you can, you know, because they're already taking fingerprints. They take hair for DNA with or without your consent. Face ID is another one of them. So biometrics are not protected, but stuff in your mind is. But I would like to point out, we're still waiting really for the definitive court case on this.
True.
So in theory, but I wouldn't, you know what? Just erase your damn phone.
Now you got to do the power. Was it the power button and the volume key? Yeah. Hold them.
Yes.
And you go to SOS down, mode, and then
that's
that'll.
That's got to really annoy.
And then that triggers the where you have to put your pin in.
Don't do it in New Zealand, though. If you're going into New Zealand, travelers refusing digital search now face a fine of up to $5,000 for custom.
Worth it. If you're a criminal,
it doesn't look like I'll be visiting Trey Ratcliffe anytime soon.
They say they won't look at your cloud. We're not going to the cloud. We'll examine your phone while it's on flight mode, customs spokesperson Terry Brown said. So if you're a bad guy, just here's a tip. Store stuff
in the cloud.
In the cloud.
iCloud is your friend.
iCloud is your friend. Go ahead.
I don't know. I don't know what I think about this. This seems like it's so I don't know. It just seems like I don't have really anything on my phone that I need to hide, but I still don't want someone looking through it or my computer.
Right. Don't worry.
It's still yours.
You're a nice white boy. You'll be fine. I'm willing to bet they've only done 500, 600 searches in New Zealand of phones a year. But I'm willing to bet Ant's much more likely to get it than you are.
Pretty sure of it.
Pretty sure of that. And if Ant would wear a turban, we should do a little test just to see.
Well,
I come and go from the United States. They barely look at me. They go, yeah, go on.
The sad truth.
There was a line.
If I get tanned too much, I get flagged.
Yeah. Rubino, definitely. Look at
him. They don't know what I am. They're like, what are you? Dark?
What are you? Are you from Russia? You look suspicious.
I'll be honest. The 9 times out of 10 at LAX, the officials
Rich!
Are.
Rich! How you
they
doing?
Watch KTLA.
Of course they do.
So it's actually, I was laughing one time because the guy just waved me by and I was like, well, now that I say this, it's going to be really bad.
You got him in trouble, dude.
Next time I go, it was just like, I mean, it was just commenting on the last report, and I just thought it was so funny because I had this whole bag with me, and, you know, it just, they didn't, you know.
Love you on TV. The best thing, if you want to be a terrorist, get a job in local television. It's the best thing you can do. And now don't get any ideas, DeMuro.
No.
I have to say, when I came back in the United States after my vacation a couple of weeks ago, I'm not kidding. there was a the long. So I, you know, Johnny Jett is always saying you got to get global. What is that? Global entry.
Global entry. I just got mine.
Did you?
Global entry. Yeah.
So because you get it and you get your. So I'm looking the global entry line at JFK. There's 80 people in it. I walk right up. I barely took out the passport. He said, "Yeah," and walk through. And they're still waiting in line for global entry.
Yeah.
Too many people know about it, Rubino.
Those new kiosks at JFK are really, really nice.
I do like that, yeah. And they print out a little receipt with a very bad picture of you.
Yes. Right. I didn't think the picture would go anywhere, so I made a funny face, and then all of a sudden it printed it out. I was like, oh, no.
Oh, crap. That's okay, because like, hey, it's DeMuro. Look at him. He's a clown. Come on in, DeMuro.
You do get TSA pre with it.
Yes, that's worth it.
Yeah,
that's worth it. Yes, that is worth it.
Yeah. Because then you don't have to take off your shoes.
Yeah, that's it.
Or your Apple Watch.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
It all goes through. It all works.
If I take off my belt, my pants fall down. I am not kidding. It has happened several times. It's quite embarrassing.
I'm carrying the
bucket with my laptop and camera, and I'm holding up my pants.
I've been in that boat too.
Humiliating.
They do make belts.
It's us guys with big femurs. That's what it is.
I will say I did have one predicament when I went to Mobile World Congress several years ago in Spain, leaving Barcelona.
Yeah.
Going through the little scanner and the scanner goes off. What most people don't know, I have a replaced left hip.
Oh.
Titanium and all that good stuff.
Oh, yeah. Set off every alarm.
And so it went off. And while I'm there in Barcelona, I'm not thinking about what I was doing, but I did like this. I tapped my hip. Probably the worst thing.
Did they jump you? Did they throw you to the ground and pin you?
Oh, it got physical pretty quick. I was impressed at how quick they came over there.
So, of course,
I don't speak a lick of Spanish. Right. You know, but the second I did it, I knew it was the wrong thing to do. And I can laugh about it now.
Wow, that's scary.
Actually, I laughed about it after the fact.
Yeah, that's scary.
Because it was just an honest mistake.
Just, I'll teach you a little Spanish. If that happens again, you shout, ándale, ándale, ándale. I think that means I'm okay. I might be wrong. God, that's terrible, Ant. I'm sorry to hear that.
It's okay. I mean, the thing is I appreciate how quickly they reacted, you know, because they were trying to keep everybody else safe, period.
Are we talking like two, three, like more than one person?
Oh, it was at least four people coming.
Wow.
That's good, though. You're right, because they're on it.
That's so funny, because when I got into Barcelona, and I'm thinking, this is the entry, the gateway to all of Europe, right? Once you're in Spain, you can go anywhere in the EU, and they don't look at you. So I thought, well, they'll probably, you know, screen me a little bit. Nothing.
Nothing.
Here's my passport. Yeah. Get in there.
I'm sure if I'm ever invited back to Mobile World Congress again, they are looking for this tall, bald-headed black dude to walk through there.
Okay. The chat room says, instead of Andale, say, otra cerveza, por favor.
Oh, now that I get. I speak that language very well.
California has enacted a net neutrality law. U.S. government sues immediately to block it.
So much for states' rights.
Well, this cracks me up because it's effectively an admission. So the net neutrality law is pretty bland. It says something I think we would all agree on. The new California law prohibits internet service. See how you feel about this. Internet service providers may not block or throttle lawful traffic. They may not require fees from websites or online services or to deliver or prioritize traffic to consumers. It bans paid data cap exemptions. That's zero rating, right? So you get free Spotify. And says that ISPs cannot attempt to evade net neutrality by slowing down traffic at network interconnection points. That's all it says. So this is why I'm blown away, because immediately the U.S. government says, no, we can't have that. And immediately AT&T and Verizon says, we're suing. How dare you? You don't agree that none of that should happen? Didn't Ajit Pai said none of that would happen? That you don't need this regulation? Didn't he say that? So why are they suing? What are you worried about?
As someone who lived through that Verizon Netflix issue years ago where Verizon was supposedly throttling Netflix.
It was the interconnect, right?
Yeah. I mean, this is just nonsense. And especially for if you're a Republican and conservative, this idea that states should be able to regulate their own kind of commerce and
make their own laws. I'm no lawyer, but it is in the Constitution that when it comes to interstate commerce, that's a federal thing. No state may. And so they're saying, well, this is interstate commerce.
Yeah.
The state is saying that this law was very carefully written because, of course, they knew that that would be the hook. It's been very carefully written not to interfere with interstate commerce. And they say, but wait a minute. There is no federal regulation. The FCC struck that federal regulation. So we're not interfering with the feds at all. We're just saying here in California, we want this. Problem is, AT&T doesn't, and Verizon doesn't. And they're the ones who bought the federal legislature and apparently the FCC. Here's a law nobody would sue against. California law is now banning bots from pretending to be human. Yeah.
This got kind of scary. When I called a hotel, I was at Ignite a couple weeks ago with Microsoft, called the Hyatt, and it was a bot picked up. But they're getting so realistic now. You can kind of tell it was fake, but it was a human talking, like human voice. But then when you would give your answer, be like, you know, are you interested in reservations? And you'd say like reservations. And then you'd hear a keyboard clicking. Like it was actually typing.
AT&T does that.
See, they're trying to trick you. That's bad.
It gives you the it's like a filler. Obviously, it's while it's looking up the information, but it does simulate a lot like you're talking to a person.
Well, it's the same argument that Google made with the duplex.
They passed this law because of that.
And the exactly. Because they said, oh, that makes it more natural, but they're using that time to kind of compute things as well. Right. So, sure. I mean, it's weird. I mean,
California law should say the bot has to say working instead of or typing. Working. California.
As long as it works, I don't care. Just make it work.
No, so the problem there, though, is it's not so much if I'm calling the Hyatt, right? I'm expecting someone like that. It's if I get a call that could be a bot and I don't know, that's the issue. Like, you could do a lot of deception here. You think about it. If you can program bots to randomly call people, this is like the new war dialing of 2020.
Well, and you can see the point of it when you read the text. It says, the measure bans automated accounts from pretending to be real people in order to, quote, incentivize a purchase or sale of goods or services in a commercial transaction or to influence a vote in an election. So
is this,
they don't want somebody to call up saying, hi, this is Rich DeMuro, and I'd like to sell you a condo. Right?
Okay. Yeah. Well, robocalls are already so terrible, but I mean, this is kind of like another, I mean, it's just, these bots are, I mean, it's weird because on one side, they are kind of useful for certain things, like when you're interacting with an airline. Like, I always kind of avoid all this stuff because I feel like just the human could do it better. But, you know, now if you see Bank of America is advertising that new thing called like Erica, and it's like you can ask her your credit score. Hey, Erica, what's my credit? I mean, it's really weird the world that we're living in because these things can be useful.
It's better than a very elaborate tree, right? Press one to do. But I think the real concern here is election tampering, really. That's really what this is all about. California, California is now in the forefront. There's a vacuum in D.C. So California is now going to outlaw weak password use.
Wow.
Starting in 2020, manufacturers of connected devices will have to build in reasonable security features, including better password protection. Now, it's still a bill. It's not a law yet. But it's interesting that lawmakers are getting into
like
this.
I like that. That's smart, actually. Kudos. Because it's, again, going back to protecting ourselves from ourselves. Because I don't know if the first time you got a router from one of these companies like AT&T or Verizon where it was like a different code at the bottom, like it had like a unique Wi-Fi code.
Yeah, that was a good thing. Yeah.
Instead of the universal. That was good.
Yeah.
So this is actually quite smart. It's weird, though, because when they manufacture these things over in China – I mean, do they just have to do the whole batch this way, or is it just the ones dedicated to California. I mean, it gets complicated, but.
And that's the point, I think, of the DOJ lawsuit is, look, you can't have different laws in every state because then how does a company do interstate business?
Right. And it's really expensive and tough.
But California's always been dealing this too with emissions for autos is a good example.
I think we could take credit. I mean, because LA was such a pit, you couldn't breathe.
Yeah.
California created emissions laws. By the way, the air is great now, right, in LA? Well, it's better.
I wouldn't say great, it's but better. It's breathable.
It's not Beijing bad.
It's not Beijing, no.
It probably would have been and as a result, automakers all over the world started reducing emissions. So I think that there is some case to be made that, you know, for us to step forward. Let's take a little break and then a couple more things. But first, a word from our sponsor, Quicken Loans, the best lender in the nation, number one in volume, number one in customer satisfaction. And that's not according to me. That's according to J.D. Power. They've won the J.D. Power Customer Satisfaction Award, number one, 8 years in a row. That's pretty good. 8 consecutive years. And I'll tell you, the way you get to this is by thinking about the customer experience. And that's exactly what they've done by creating Rocket Mortgage. This is an entirely online home loan approval process. You could do it on your phone. You could do it in an open house. And it's quick. It's really a three-step process. They call it the power buying process. It starts with a few simple questions. You don't have to go to the bank. You don't have to fill out a 20-page application. You just on your phone. You go to rocketmortgage.com/twit2. Answer a few simple questions. You pick the term of the loan, the rate, the down payment, and then they give you pre-qualified approval. And that happens within just a few minutes. Fast enough to do it in an open house. So now you know, good. We could get this loan. Then the best part, this is awesome. Within 24 hours, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to go get pay stubs or bank statements or anything. They'll verify your income, assets, and credit. And within 24 hours, give you verified approval. Now you've got the letter that says these guys are good for it. They've got the loan. That means you go right to the front of the line when you're buying a house. That's awesome. But there's still an issue. There's still some insecurity because interest rates are going up, right? For the first time in a few years, there's the potential that if you take too long looking for a house, your loan could cost you thousands of dollars more. That's why step three. Once you've got that verified approval, you qualify for their all-new exclusive Rate Shield approval. That locks your rate for up to 90 days while you shop. You've got up to 3 months to look for a house with no fear that the rates will go up because they can't. They're locked. If the rates go up, yours stays the same. If they go down, yours is go down. So you win either way. But I think that's nice. It takes the anxiety out of shopping for a home. You don't want to be rushed. You don't want the feeling that, well, we better buy this house. You want the right house. Again, Quicken Loans, the best lender in the country. And it's things like this. Rate Shield approval that makes such a difference. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/twit2. rocketmortgage.com/twit and the number 2. Rate Shield approval is only valid in certain 30-year purchase transactions. Additional conditions or exclusions may apply based on Quicken Loans data in comparison to public data records. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. Get started today. rocketmortgage.com/twit2. We thank Rocket Mortgage and Quicken Loans for supporting Twit. I didn't ask you this. Did you guys get the presidential alert?
I did.
Yes, sir.
I did not.
You didn't? Uh-oh.
That's not the test. No. It means you've been kicked out of the country, by the way.
You have to leave now. Yeah.
I got it on one of my phones. I have two phones. I have an AT&T and Verizon. I got it on my AT&T. I did not get it on my Verizon.
So the FCC is asking that you contact them if you didn't get it.
Oh, yeah. I'm just going to call them right now.
Call them. They're waiting.
A van will come by your house.
Yeah. They'll be popping in.
We were looking for you, Rich.
You know, I was here and you saw the video on our promo. I had four phones in front of me. Three went off. One did not. And it was my iPhone. And I'm wondering, it's on T-Mobile, but we use a femtocell, one of those little microcells. I'm wondering if that's why it didn't go off. Mm. Lisa's didn't either. She's also using the T-Mobile iPhone. Did yours go off, John? You weren't here.
Mine was an iPhone that didn't work, the Verizon one. My Pixel I actually had it off because I was traveling. As soon as I turned it on, it did come through like, instantly. So it's not, I mean,
did you talk about this on KTLA? Did you warn people? Because I think a lot of people were worried when they saw the words presidential alert.
Yes. Oh, yeah. This was a talker. I mean, the story that, you know, it was just funny how it was like the president texting us or tweeting us or whatever, which isn't really the case. But no, everyone, right. The biggest question was how to turn this off, which you can't do.
It's permanent. So I did get one phone that was a little different than the others. I got this alert, and I thought this was a little strange. From Cthulhu, no action is needed. He will find you. I don't know. That's from Reddit. Obviously a fake.
Oh, man.
Well, at least the system sort of works.
I wonder how many spam texts we're going to see in the next week.
Yeah. Presidential alert. Time to buy that condo.
Or download this app by clicking this link. Yeah. And, you know.
Yeah. Well. Hey, Rich, it's been great having you on. Please come back. Rich Tamura.
I will. Thank you.
KTLA. You can read his stuff, follow him, and get this podcast at richontech.tv. Richontech.tv. I think a lot of people were familiar with you from CNET. And where else have you been? You've been all over the place.
CNET, let's see. Yeah, I mean, CNET was my big kind of tech world thing. And then I've done a lot of local news. I was, Channel One News also, if you're familiar with that. That was in high school.
You were on Channel One in high school?
That's awesome.
Channel One. That was like my...
That's how you got started?
No, not how I got started. I worked there. But
Channel
that was like
One
my dream.
For schools only, right?
Yes. And I think it went out of business just recently. I think it's over.
Yeah, I think you're right.
But that was amazing because it was like young kids that didn't know how to do anything, but they had these really like older producers, which by the way, were probably like 30 at the time.
Yeah, they felt old, right?
They felt old. And they had, you know, they were the ones that were kind of driving you and helping you do everything. But I learned so much there about how to create news
and make stories
and all that. Yeah, it was really, really neat.
The farewell. Here's the farewell from Channel One.
Oh, so news. Sad.
Yeah.
I mean, this is what made me want to become a journalist. I'll be honest. This was... Goodbye.
Nice clean cut people. Oh, yeah. All out
representing
of work.
Representing everyone.
Every demographic in the nation. We've got one Asian woman, two African Americans, and one stud.
They didn't ask me to do a.
Were you in the stud category, Rich?
No, I was not the stud. Okay. I was like the skinny dorky guy.
Oh, skinny dorky guy. You gotta have one of those. I'm a nerd.
Yeah.
Check all the boxes.
Why is Channel One closing? I don't know, but it is. Maybe they lost money. I don't know. Maybe they miss Rich Tamura. Rich, you will find on KTLA Channel 5. It's Channel 5, right?
Yep, Channel 5.
Yep. And you're on most evenings on the evening news? When?
No, I wake up at 3 a.m. every day.
Oh, Lord.
Every morning, yeah.
No.
So, yeah, I'm
That's
on
too early.
4 a.m. to 10 a.m.
You got to get my schedule. I show up at 11.
I love your schedule, Leo.
And in fact, most people watching know sometimes not even 11.
I was going to say, I've been on that live stream and seen you just sort of casually walking. Oh, we got a show to do.
My hair is all messed up. What?
When I wanted to get there at 10 for the weekend show, they're like, why so early?
Oh, my God. They told me you got here at 10.
They weren't. I felt bad for John making him get in so early.
No.
John is like, I'm usually just rolling in. I get my quiet time.
We have it set up. So I leave the house 5 minutes before 11. The show begins at 11:06:30. I leave the house 5 minutes to 11. I pull up around about 11:01, 11:02, sometimes 11:03, 11:04. John by now knows he's got to be standing at the back door with it open, have the other door propped open. And the seat ready, all the buttons pushed so that I can run in and sit down and turn on the microphone and say, good morning.
I got life goals right now.
Yeah.
I love that. I love it. I love it. I have been late, I think, twice? I've been doing this thing since 2004. What is that? It'll be 15 years in January. Late twice, big deal. And when I'm late... You know what they do? the engineer knows about this in Los Angeles. He runs an old show. Because I say pretty much the same thing at the beginning all the time.
You're giving away all your secrets, Leo.
starts running the old show. It's the same thing. Hi, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. And then I get in, and then I say, okay, at the end of this sentence, cut over to me. And then they cut over to me, and I just keep on going, and no one knows.
And this is life hacking at its best.
I have worked this out. You are the great Ant Pruitt. Always a pleasure to have you on. Ant, thanks for filling in at the last moment. We're going to get you out of here in time for the game, right?
Totally my pleasure, Mr. Laporte. Seriously.
Texans, Cowboys. What are they calling it? The fracas in Dallas?
All I know is it's called Sunday Night Football, and I will be watching.
That's all that matters. But did they finally get Hank Jr. back singing that?
Oh, no.
No,
those were the good old days.
Man, they got some. They got some winner.
It's all poppy now.
I hate it. You know? I hate it. It's got to be. You know, are you ready for some football?
That's right. Both.
Yeah. That's Daniel Rubino. He's wondering how he got into this country, and so are we.
It's true.
Executive editor at Windows Central. You can catch Daniel on the Twitter at Daniel_Rubino. Ant Pruitt is on the Twitter as well. Is it Ant_Pruitt or just Ant Pruitt?
It is. Ant_Pruitt.
Both of your underscores. Huh.
Yeah, because some turd has the game.
Get into the game late, yeah. How about you, Rich DeMuro? What's your Twitter handle?
Mine is actually Rich DeMuro, but I need to switch it to Rich on Tech because that's what I go by on everything else.
Yeah, right.
So I'm going to have a talk with Twitter soon, see if I can do that.
Yeah, I do not have a Twitter handle. Don't tweet me. Hey, we thank you all for joining us. We appreciate it. Thanks to our studio audience. Noah was here from Cleveland. We had Bill. He was visiting from Jacksonville. KW4FD 73. Doug from Cascade, Iowa. He took the train out here. Took the Zephyr, California Zephyr. Greg, he's from Lake Tahoe. Hi, Greg. Great to have you. And John, who John used to work at Telltale Games. Yeah, it's a sad story. You know, we got to get you on. I'd love to hear the story of Telltale Games. They notably shut their doors a couple of weeks ago, and everybody suddenly out of work. A lot of them so shocked, you know, they couldn't pay their rent. It was like, what? Sad story. They were the ones who did the Walking Dead stories, and they did Minecraft stories, and everybody thought they're doing great. Instead, John's stuck here. Watching Twit. We do Twit every Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, 2200 UTC. If you want to come by and say hi, you could do it in three different ways. You can, of course, email tickets at twit.tv. You got to be in the Northern California area. Come by Petaluma. We'll put a seat out for you. No charge for that. You can also watch on our live stream, twit.tv/live. If you do that, please join the chat room at irc.twit.tv. There's a bunch of other people watching live, and you can chat with them and have fun. And, of course, if you can't watch live or be here live, you can always get on-demand versions of our show. Twit.tv is our website. All of our shows are available there, audio and video for download, with the one exception of The Valley of Genius, our new podcast, which is audio only because it's interviews, audio interviews with the people who made Silicon Valley great. And there was just audio, so no reason to make a video show out of it, but it's great. With Adam Fisher, Valley of Genius. That's our new show, twit.tv/VOG. If you want to subscribe in your favorite podcast application, including Spotify, it's easy to do. Go to twit.tv/subscribe. You can find out how to subscribe to the newsletter. And then there's links there that tell you how to subscribe to our podcast. Get it on your podcatcher. That way you'll get it the minute it's available Sunday night. Is there anything else I need to say? Did I say everything I have to say? Thanks to all of you for being here. We had a lot of fun. Really appreciate it. We'll see you next
time.
Thanks
for having me.
Yeah. Another Twit is in the can.
Bye-bye.